Spectator Sport. Thanks for joining me. I will see you tomorrow to wrap up the week. This has been Bruce Birch on the Head On Radio Network. Stay tuned for Bob Kincaid. He'll be up next.
Prison doors swung open. Mothers hugged their sons. The Liberty Bell was ringing when the cops put down their guns. A million innocent people.
This is a Quality News Network. The six world leaders who have been reviewing Iran's response to their incentives package are expected to turn down Tehran's offer for talks. That's because the response doesn't indicate one way or the other whether Iran will stop its nuclear work, as Western powers have demanded. Iran has less than a week to stop enriching uranium. If it isn't halted by August 31st, the Security Council has threatened to impose broad economic and political sanctions. Meanwhile, Israel has purchased two more German-made submarines that are undetectable and capable of carrying nuclear warheads. Israel is believed to have the sixth largest stockpile of nuclear weapons in the world. World leaders say an international peacekeeping force could be in southern Lebanon by next week. European leaders met in France today to hammer out more details, with France pledging up to 2,000 troops to the 15,000-strong force. Lebanese villagers have begun receiving humanitarian aid as UN workers surveyed the damage left by Israeli airstrikes. They've so far reported water shortages, widespread crop failures, and a need for basic relief items. In London, authorities have charged another person in connection with the alleged transatlantic bombing plot. He's accused of knowing about the plan but not disclosing it to authorities. In the Gaza Strip today, Israeli forces captured a Hamas militant leader and killed his brother in an early morning raid. In Baghdad, the top U.S. commander in Iraq said the country is far from civil war and, quote, there's been great progress in the security front there recently in Baghdad, end quote. Across Iraq today, at least 13 people, including at least two U.S. soldiers, were killed in bombings and shootings. The Associated Press reports that the Army is launching an investigation into the deaths of American soldiers in Iraq, Afghanistan, and nearby countries. That comes after accusations that the military has given their family inaccurate information. In Washington, the Food and Drug Administration has ruled that women 18 years and older do not have to get a prescription for the so-called morning after pill. Two Democratic senators later said they would drop their objections over President Bush's nomination for the head of the agency. And in Prague, a group of astronomers has demoted Pluto from a full-fledged planet to a dwarf planet. They say Pluto doesn't meet the definition of a planet, so our solar system now has only eight. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The Commerce Department reports that new home sales in July fell by 4.3%. Also in July, the median price of a new home was $230,000. The Commerce Department also reports that new orders for durable goods went down by $5.3 billion last month. The Labor Department says last week 313,000 Americans applied for unemployment benefits. That's down 1,000 from the previous week. Freddie Mac reports that the average interest rates on 30-year mortgages have fallen for the fifth straight week. They now average 6.48%. Apple Computer is recalling 1.8 million Sony laptop batteries due to a fire hazard. That comes soon after Dell announced a similar recall for the same reason. Both recalls are expected to cost Sony between $172 and $278 million. Apple Computer has settled a patent dispute with rival Creative Technology over digital music player software and systems. Apple will pay $100 million to the Singapore-based company. And President Bush says he's ready to sign a free trade deal with Colombia. That comes after the two countries reached an agreement over U.S. beef imports and other agricultural issues. Light sweet crude settled today at $72.36, and at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 7 points at 11,304, NASDAQ up 2 points, S&P 500 up 3 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's 6 minutes after the hour on a Thursday evening here in the beautiful hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West Virginia. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I'm thrilled to death to be with you. And I'm excited about what you're going to bring to the table tonight. What I'm going to bring to the table this evening is what I believe will be an extremely interesting conversation. And that conversation is going to be with Bishop Carlton Pearson. He should be calling in, I hope, here in about 6-7 minutes. And we're going to have a little conversation about a book that he's got coming out. He's rather turned the traditional evangelical world on its ear lately. And I think you're going to be very interested to hear what he has to say. In other news, this is one of those that just, I mean, let's, maybe we can talk about this a little bit later. A federal judge, gee whiz. Yesterday threw out a lawsuit by coal miners demanding that the government do more to ensure miners have working oxygen supplies and know how to use them. You remember you remember how the Bushistas came out after the ruling last week saying that their stinking little wiretapping activist judge. That's the Al-Qaeda judge, the activist liberal judge. Yeah. Sure. Well, I submit, here's your activist judge. John D. Bates, U.S. District Judge John D. Bates. The lawsuit was filed in June after Congress had overhauled mine safety rules in response to the Sago mine disaster. The UMWA then tried to force the Mine Safety and Health Administration, which is a misnomer all the way around as long as it's being run by the Bush administration, tried to force them to conduct periodic checks of oxygen units and provide emergency training for all underground coal miners. Gee, that's... Wait a minute. That's rational. You know, this is another one of... This is another one of those examples of what happens when organized labor does the right thing. There are non-union coal mines all over the country. Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky, Virginia, Alabama. Plenty of, but you see, those individuals don't have the strength one by one by one to go on bended knee and beg the company to do a little more to make sure that when disaster strikes, they're not automatically dead. But the United Mine Workers of America does have that power. And they did what they did, not just for UMWA miners, but for miners all across the country. And what they did, U.S. District Judge John D. Bates undid. And this is, you know, this is the kind of smarmy stuff you get from these kind of people. Quote, "The loss of lives and the risks miners presently face weigh heavily in public discourse and are taken seriously by this court. But the tragedy of those events and the need for greater protection described by plaintiff cannot substitute for the requirements of the law." Anybody want to guess how many amicus curiae briefs were filed by the American Coal Operators Association, the West Virginia Coal Association, the Pennsylvania Coal Association? Anybody want to guess the number of briefs that were filed? "Oh, my God, if you do this, we'll go bankrupt and no coal miners will ever work again. Dear God, judge, when you turn on your light in your special judicial bathroom, the lights won't go on." Because that's the, it's just another example. We should have a little roulette wheel that we spin in. You know, where's the Fear-O-Matic gonna stop tonight? Oh, look, it's stopping on Judge John D. Bates. Phil Smith is a spokesman for the UMWA. He said it could have led to security for coal miners that the safety equipment they carry with them underground every day was working properly. Because, you see, Randall McCloy, the only survivor of the Sago disaster, said clearly, plainly, eloquently, unabashedly that the self-rescue devices, you know, I think if you get right down to it, it's one of those binary chemical mixtures that's designed to provide an hour or so of air in case of a disaster. He said at Sago they tried to use them, and a bunch of them didn't work. And so the UMWA came in and said, "Look, you know, judge, would you just require the Mine Safety and Health Administration to make sure that the stuff that they've already mandated works?" And Judge John D. Bates said he could not be bothered because it was not part of the requirements of the law. All three of the lawsuits accuse International Coal Group and subsidiary of negligence in the operation of the mine. My God. So those suits have not yet been dismissed. But the coal companies will do everything in their power to see to it that they are. You see, that's the thing, and this is our job, your job, my job. When we hear these freaks and goobers out there saying, "Activist judges want to let the queers get married." No, you see, no, activist judges want miners to die in dark, gassy holes. That's what activist judges do. I don't know, maybe, you know, this is not manufactured outrage. This really, really just chaps my butt. That judge gets up every morning and, you know, putters into the kitchen and flips the light switch on and turns his coffee maker on. And every blessed thing he does because some guy goes under the ground and risks his very existence to make sure that it can happen. But by the same token, Judge John D. Bates goes to the grocery store and, you know, I mean, he makes a tidy salary. He makes something upwards of $100,000 a year. He's on the federal teat. And he picks up a piece. Oh, my God. T-bone steak's gone to $14.99. I can only buy 10 today. And he never thinks of the cow. or the slaughter city somewhere in the American Midwest, or he picks up a Smithfield ham and doesn't think about the 32,000 animals that are slaughtered there every day by 5,000 workers who are intimidated and harassed to keep them from standing together and demanding fair working conditions. John D. Bates doesn't think about any of that. And he comes home in the evening, and his lovely wife hands him a lovely cocktail, and she says, "How was your day, dear?" And he said, "I screwed a bunch of coal miners today. It was great. Make it a double." John D. Bates is an activist judge. Any person who thinks more of a coal company than he thinks of a coal miner. Anybody who thinks more of a coal company than he thinks of the widow of a coal miner is an activist judge, because that is absolutely inhuman conduct. So that's where we start this evening. I couldn't let that. I felt like I had to share that with you at the beginning of the show. Now, what we need to do now, we need to take a little break. And when we come back, I'm looking forward to our conversation with Bishop Carlton Pearson. He's online now and waiting to join us. If you want to look at some of what he has to say, I want you the website you might want to take a peep at. God is not a Christian. .us. God is not a Christian. .us. So when we come back, we will have our first conversation of the evening. This is the Head On Radio Network. Me? I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to wateruseitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Herbst. I play Elizabeth Weber on General Hospital. I want you to know about a wonderful nonprofit foundation called the Jesse Cause, saving the babies from Group B strep, also known as beta strep. It's named after little Jesse, who needed 3 brain surgeries, all because his mom was never given a simple test. Group beta strep is the leading infectious killer of newborns in the United States, yet most people have never even heard of it. Amazingly, 1/3 of all pregnant women have beta strep, and it's almost 90% preventable with common antibiotics. Tell your friends about beta strep, and if you're pregnant, ask your doctor to test you. Together, we can save the babies and put an end to this devastating yet preventable bacteria. For more information, call toll-free at 877-HALT-GBS. That's 877-HALT-GBS. Or log on to groupbstrep.com. That's groupbstrep.com. Jesse and I thank you.
Welcome back to Head On, 21 and a half minutes after the hour. We're joined on the phone right now by Bishop Carlton Pearson. Bishop Pearson, thank you so much, first of all, for joining us this evening on Head On. Bishop?
Hello?
Ah, there you are.
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I was hearing you, I guess.
No, it was our bad. Wrong button. We have entirely too many buttons to deal with.
All right.
Thank you so much for joining us. One of my listeners sent me an article concerning what I consider some exciting new theology brought about on your part. Before we jump into that, though, would you please tell us a little bit about your ministry?
Well, the name of it is New Dimensions, having been called Higher Dimensions for 27 years, but we had to change the name after we got what we call the left foot of fellowship from the larger evangelical Christian community. Because I began to preach from the Christian theology of salvation that Christians were not the only people going to heaven, that you didn't have to join our exclusive club to be loved by God or advocated by Christ. And having been a fourth-generation classical Pentecostal preacher, that didn't set well at all. And but now we are preaching what we call the gospel of inclusion, which is a peace principle that we think would resolve a lot of the critical issues that religion, fear-based religion, has brought to the universe. So now we just welcome all people to come together, and that we don't have to go along to get along, and that we can mind many of the same things without having the same mind about everything. So now I dialogue with Muslims and Jews and Hindus and atheists and agnostics and same gender loving people, and treat everybody with equal respect, and both for their positions and for their value as human beings.
I hope you will, and I hope you can understand, and I'm not being at all critical at this, about hearing this coming from someone from the Pentecostal community is positively shocking to me, Bishop. I was raised in the Southern Baptist Church, and frankly, I refer to myself as a recovering Southern Baptist. because a lot of the things that you just mentioned, frankly, fear, hate, bigotry, prejudice, small-mindedness, seems to be the stock in trade of what I call the right-wing religion industry right now. Am I far afield on that?
No, it's big money. We sell tickets out into heaven and out of hell, And we create those hells and dramatize it and glamorize it to where people are more eager to get out of it. And then we have this concept of heaven that is exclusive and bigoted, and we preach a God who is worse than Hitler. Hitler supposedly burned 6 million Jews. I think probably been more like 12 million people suffered under him. But God's going to burn and torture his customized torture chamber several billion people infinitely. That whole concept is both absurd, vulgar, and immoral. But I preached it, Bob, with the rest and best of them. I don't know that I ever really believed it, but I accepted it.
You came from the Oral Roberts tradition, did you not?
Yes, sir, I did.
I'm trying not to reach for too many broad modifiers or anything, but the last time I heard of anybody having a sea change like what you're describing, Bishop, it was a guy on the road to Damascus.
Paul, yeah. Well, I fell off my horse, and then they got on the horse and tried to stomp me with it. But I think that these people, and I hate to say this, Bob, you know, it's going to be offensive to perhaps some of your audience, but we have become a cult following of Jesus, and we have turned the religion that bears his name into something entirely different than what he would have wanted as the man Christ Jesus who walked this earth and pointed us to God. And I have often asked the question, do we need Jesus to protect us from God? This is totally different from the way I was raised. I mean, from Pat Robertson, whose show I was on several times, and Jim and, you know, Tammy Baker, Paul and Jane Crouch, James Robinson, the whole group, even had, you know, I read a recent article where Billy Graham is leaning further away from that mentality into a more inclusive consciousness. But I've sat with him and discussed some of these matters, and I realize that it is shocking and stunning, and it flies in the face of 1,500 years of entrenched indoctrination. So I'm not alarmed at their alarm, but it means that we just need to address it, confront it, and if necessary, combat it until it disappears.
Well, I got to tell you, Bishop, that you know, within your tradition, there are things, the gifts of the Holy Spirit and speaking in tongues, yeah, and things like that. I feel almost dumbstruck. This is something that I, having been raised in a Christian tradition, and frankly, I've rejected a great deal of it through study, through my own soul searching. This is something that almost dumbstrikes me. This is something what you're talking about. This gospel of inclusion is something that America, I believe, has got to hear, because otherwise we're going to tear ourselves to pieces.
Oh yeah, oh yes. It's not only faith based; it's faith biased. We have become an exclusive group of elitist, arrogant, and in many ways purely ignorant religious zealots. Paul said about his own people, and I've preached in your synagogues and been well received to packed houses, that his people had a zeal of God, but not according to knowledge. And the Oral Roberts is, and he's a dear man, 88 years old, and will probably soon be in heaven, but those people did all they knew to do based on what they were taught by their parents, and they were taught by their parents, and the list goes all the way back to at least 1,500 years, the first 500 years of Christian history. Universal salvation was the general consensus. The early church fathers, from Clement of Alexandria all the way to Gregory of Nyssa, you know, 200 years between them, they were not only universal reconciliationists, they believed in ultimate reconciliation, that if there is a devil, that he and his demons would ultimately be restored to their original place with God. But a lot of these things, Bob, that we've been taught are really traditions, things traded down to us over the centuries that have not been properly investigated. And scholars and historians sometimes laugh at us, and I was a televangelist like the rest of them. They sit back and laugh at us because they know, and you could ask the average preacher in this pulpit on Sunday morning, what does the word Bible mean? And they really can't tell you. They don't know its actual literal meaning. It's simply book.
Biblos, book.
Biblos, yes, book. But they don't know what is the word of God. It's really the word of man about God as man perceives him, which is inaccurate. How can the finite define the infinite? So we don't really know who God is. You know, we don't know what God is.
This is the search, is it not?
It is the search.
The book is the search.
It's the quest and the question for self-actualization. But we package it in religion, and we shut people down mentally. You know what? My strict holiness background, which I have a certain element of respect for, of course, because I'm four generations, but it produced some of the most dysfunctional human mess I've ever seen. You know, Christians have a much higher divorce rate than atheists, and the blue states are not compared to the red states. It's amazing how religion disrupts and corrupts mentalities and makes us bigoted. Because if you believe your God hates people enough to torture them forever, and you worship God and believe in that God, then you're going to act out that hatred and torture. Thus, we can drop bombs on whole cultures, not just countries. Thus, as the Muslims who are religious zealots too can say, praise to Allah and blow down the trade towers, we say in the name of Jesus, let our bullets reach their target, dear God.
You remind what you've just spoken, Bishop, reminds me very much of the words of a personal hero of mine, one Samuel Langhorne Clemens, who I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. I have a guess you are. The War Prayer?
No, I haven't heard it.
I have a feeling you will be. If you read it soon, you're going to recognize a fellow seeker on the road, because in the War Prayer, a white-robed, bearded stranger walks into a congregation, a pre-war congregation that is hell-bent on war, and tells them to be careful what they pray for, because they have just prayed to, you know, let the bullets find their mark. And then he patiently expresses what that prayer means, and he lays out the horror. And this is, you know, this is 1900. This thing was so radical that they had to publish it after Twain was dead.
Wow.
And in so saying, he lays it, you know, he says, you know, let the summer sun beat down upon them without, you know, without surcease of sorrow. Yeah, beautiful language. And I'm sensing, and I think you're going to, I know that you have been shunned by a part of your congregation, and I think that has to be part of the process that you know you have engaged in. But I think you're going to start a change in this country, because when people of real faith, and I give the religion industry the living dickens every night on this radio program, but when people of real faith, Bishop, begin to talk about what real faith means in terms of the willingness to literally kill over 100,000 innocents in a land 8,000 miles away,
yeah,
half of whom are women and children, and the people supporting that claim to be pro-life, what I've frequently said, Bishop, is that we got to stop all this God bless America nonsense and get real busy with some God forgive America.
And God heal America. God deliver America from itself. And it's crazy religious arrogance. It so stuns me. And you know what, Bob? I'm sure I'm guilty of it because I'm reading what I saw. If I have ever treated any so-called non-Christian the way I have been treated by my Christian brethren, I am almost desperately apologetic. It is pitiful. If they would treat me this way, who served for 45 years of my life in the community as a leader, and then for them to turn not only away but against so viciously and vociferously against me, I think we've done that to millions of people who are non-Christians, not Christians, or who are what we call backsliders. And you know what? I get letters from a lot of retired pastors and guys that left the ministry and started selling insurance, anything, just from agnostics, Hindus, Muslims, Jews, Mormons, Quakers, gays, agnostics, atheists, thousands of people who we, in the name of our religion, many Christians in the name of the Lord, we have bludgeoned people and whole denominations have shut them down. I've seen it with my own eyes. It's got to stop. It is very self-destructive. And the evangelical Christian community in America, they may not call themselves whoremongers, though I know some who are. They're definitely warmongers. And we if you visit some of the holy sites in Europe of our great Christian churches, they're basically mausoleums celebrating fallen soldiers who died supposedly aiding the cross, or cruise aiding, you know, cruise is
sure
a word for cross. We've turned Christianity into militarism, democratization and Christianization of cultures. It's all by the sword. You live by the sword, you die by the sword. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But you know what that comes out of? People say, well, what about Hitler? Hitler must be in heaven. I said, Hitler was in hell the whole time he was here. And where do you think he learned to burn
Amen.
His enemies except from our Bible?
Well, if a student, and I mentioned this last night on my program, Wednesday night we have something we call prayer meeting, Bishop. And we talk about the excesses of the religion industry.
You mean over the air?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that'd be interesting.
Oh, it is. But one of the, you know, Hitler's writings are replete with references to the scripture.
Of course.
And he believed he was anointed of God.
Absolutely.
I have argued on a number of occasions that the single most deadly word in the English language, Bishop, is believe. Because it got 6 million, yeah, you said 6, maybe 12, yeah, million human beings dead.
Yeah.
Believing.
Yeah.
And the thing is, there were not a whole bunch of Muslims or Buddhists or Taoists or Jainists, in pre-war Germany. The Holocaust happened at the hands of people who called themselves followers of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. And Hitler did not kill 6 to 12 million people by himself. He was enabled by hundreds of thousands of people. And not to mention the United States, probably the Catholic Church, the House of Windsor, all looking the other direction, feeling that he was in line to torture Jews because Jews killed Christ. That was the mentality. We endorsed that dastardly deed.
Henry Ford endorsed it. IBM endorsed it. General Motors.
You bet.
I'm trying to remember the name of the banking house in New York City that funded Fritz Thyssen, who was Hitler's angel financier. You know, George Bush's grandfather was charged under the Trading with the Enemy Act, Prescott Bush, in 1943 for his Brown Brothers Harriman. That's the name of the banking house. Brown Brothers Harriman. Prescott Bush worked for them. They funded Fritz Thyssen.
Oh, my.
You know, that's how deeply it goes. I mean, there are roots of this evil that you are boldly proclaiming, Bishop. And I'm not sure how you dig it out, but it seems to me that you've got the spade in your hand. Let me ask you though, this is prologue, is it not? These are the things that changed and moved you. What is the gospel of inclusion?
The good news that if there is in fact a benevolent God, that benevolent God created and loves what it or he created. That everybody, now from the Christian theology, Jesus died for the sins of the world, not for sins of the church or the Christian. If in fact Calvary is effectual, if our God desires blood sacrifices, which is sort of paganism anyway,
yeah.
But we have presumed that that's what God wanted, is for somebody to die and bleed. And I think that's the only way we could understand forgiveness. But if you've forgiven somebody, you don't kill them. But anyway, that's a whole other point. But the fact that the gospel of inclusion says everybody on the planet is absolutely loved by God and in Christ consciousness, advocated by Christ. You'll never know that you're free from sin till you know that you're actually free to sin and still be loved by God and advocated by Christ. Because we all sin and fall short. We have and we do. God must have known that when he created us, unless the Earth Project is a total failure, he must have known what he was doing. And then we Christians believe that Christ, or at least we're taught that he is the Lamb that was slain before the foundation of the world. In other words, the problem was solved before it existed. But we now then add to Calvary, which is sort of antichrist, because antichrist doesn't just mean against Christ, it means besides Christ. We think our doctrines, dogmas, and disciplines are what save us. Not God or not his Christ, but our denominations are really they're abominations, because they've become a seedbed for hatred and bitterness and bigotry. And I didn't know that. And I think that we don't realize that we've become clones and clowns of a culture that is no longer relevant in this 21st century. We need to review and revise our theology, our God logic, and stop this ogre, this monster God that we've invented, because I don't think hell is heaven's intention. It's man's invention.
Well, you so well said, Bishop, and it reminds me of people like the lady in Texas who drowned her children, saying that she heard the voice of God telling her to do it.
Absolutely.
And of course, she was retried, and she got off on a mental
illness.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is, I don't know that she was crazy. I'll be honest. I don't know that she was crazy because there are hosts of people in this country who hear similar things. The President of the United States, Bishop, spoke to a reporter for either the Jerusalem Post or Haaretz and said, God told me to bomb Afghanistan. God told me to take Saddam out. You know, and the thing is, it wasn't lost in the translation. It's not like he was speaking Hebrew to the reporter and somehow it got garbled.
Well, it's not just insanity, you know, it's superstition to believe that God has human emotions, that he gets angry and spits and cries and he's jealous and vengeful. And of course, that's the way he's presented, that he's jealous, that God has sex with humans. And, you know, you got Zeus and Jesus, and how you got lightning bolts coming from heaven. This whole concept is mixed. Our Christian religion is so paganized. Like Hades is the Greek mythological god of the underworld. That's not a Christian thought or a Jewish thought.
No, it's
Tartaro, you know, all those terms. Even the word venerate comes from the word Venus, but so does the word venereal. So as you say the venerable bishop, you could say the venereal bishop or the veneral, you know.
Yeah, whole new meaning.
It's all religion, yeah, and it's language and semantics, and we have become superstition, and that Greek word is desidemonia. Deus is fear for demons, of demons. Reverence for demons. We have a good God and a bad God. We have good and evil, God and devil or devil. So the tree of the knowledge of good and evil has made us dualists, and it's we can't handle the dichotomies of a good God and a no God or a good God and a bad God. So we see right and wrong, and we judge people and things and ourselves based on that principle. And if anything is accurate about the document that says, and we call it the Bible, that man was forbidden to eat from the tree of two allegiances, two loyalties, I am stunned at how committed and devoted Christians are to hell. Can you imagine a hellless Christianity? Can you conceive of God without a devil? Do you need death to define life? But we don't know how to conceive life without death or God without evil. So we're confused, and we use that base to judge a billion Muslims as evil, and they turn and say, no, you're the great infidel, Satan.
Let's kill each other.
Let's kill each other. That's exactly what we're doing.
And there's the creation of your hell, Bishop.
Yeah, that's the hell that we create. That's what I'm trying to say. We create it. We invent it. And we glamorize it. And we deify it. And we do it in the name of our God.
Well, the practical application of the gospel of inclusion, Bishop, seems to me to have earth-shattering ramifications. A world that is saved, to use the terminology, is a world that is capable of peace.
Yes.
A world that is saved is a world that no longer needs to foster the hell and damnation that happens in the Middle East because Jesus is already on earth in each and every one of us.
And the gang wars, you know, we arrest our kids here in Tulsa for gang war. But you don't arrest the guys wearing the three-piece suits in Washington. They're gang leaders, too. They have their war game going, and they can do it legally. And we give them $80 and $120 billion to do their gang war. And the kids take their cue, and
sure,
they do it in the cultures.
Yeah,
and
far more than what happened 10 years ago when the right wing was screaming, what do we tell the children about what went on between Bill and Monica? What do we tell the children, Bishop, about men in silk suits who blithely push buttons that kill tens of thousands at yes.
There, that's the message. What do we tell our children? What do we tell them? We're creating a culture of desensitized, dehumanized freaks, mutants from another culture. These kids are losing their sense of caution, care, and value. And we are beaming it to them on television and in the theaters and ratifying it through Congress and preaching it from our pulpits. Most of these preachers are not anointed, they're annoyed.
Oh, yeah.
And they stand up there and spit on the people and spew their vindictives and shake their fingers and curse the crowds. And they're miserable. A man in my own town, a preacher who had been in the Assembly of God Church for 40 years, retired. And on Election Day, this past November, went and voted probably for Bush, went home and killed his wife and beheaded her. And then jumped off a bridge here in the little suburb of Tulsa.
Dear God.
Found him 8 days later. And the name of his church was Victory Assembly of God. I call the Assembly of God the Southern Baptist of Pentecost.
Well, and very, with very good reason. Bishop, we have heard, and the political factions, that same crowd in their suits, have done everything in their power to divide this nation. And they want to divide it gun owner from non-gun owner, Southerner from Northerner. If they had a cannon and a fort in Charleston Harbor, I think they'd shoot at it if they could just get the war started. But more than anything else, and as an African American man, I think you can probably speak to this better than anyone else. Now that level of bigotry is not so socially acceptable, the next group are the people who don't have sex the way that they want them to have sex.
Oh yeah.
They're part of the gospel of inclusion too, are they not?
Absolutely. And I didn't realize what damage we had done until I started preaching inclusion, and scores of letters came for me, two very powerful ones. The first one said, from a humble agnostic to a committed Christian. Then this guy wrote a beautiful story. The other one said, I'm white, I'm male, I'm Jewish, I'm atheist, and I'm gay. And then two more paragraphs that brought me to tears in his expression of his pain, but of his perception of the goodness of God. Some of the most spiritual letters I've gotten have come from atheists and gay people. And homosexuality and homosexuals are not going away. And you cannot fairly discuss homosexuality without discussing human sexuality. And we're sexual beings. And to take a group of people, and when you sit with a man and he says to you, look, Bishop, it's not just my preference. My orientation is homo. I don't understand heterosexuality. And I say, excuse me, can you tell me that again, sir? He says, I have absolutely no desire for a female. And I'm thinking, well, what do you mean by that? I mean, if a naked woman came in here, would you not be aroused? Would you have no emotion? He says, absolutely none. So I'm saying, no, explain yourself. Talk to me. Tell me where you are. And then when you listen to him, it's like me saying to you, Bob, I suppose you're Caucasian or something other than black. I would say,
no, I'm pink. I'm so pink.
And I didn't have a black preference. That was just my orientation. I wanted to be white when I was a kid because all the white kids I knew were rich, even though I thought they were mean and unsafe. They were rich. And they had more than I did. And their whole self-confidence seemed differently. But I was black not by choice. I was black by birth. Now I'm proud, of course. But in those days, there was nothing I could change the melanin in my skin to be different. And when a gay person, male or female, says, this is my orientation. It may not be my preference, though in many cases it is. It's my orientation. I have to respect what they say and respect them for saying it. And I don't treat them any different than I would want to be treated as an African American in the culture in which I live.
How do you address then the people who would say that, you know, you're a heretic. No, you're an apostate, aren't you?
Yes.
You know, because it says in Deuteronomy that, you know, you can't wear clothes made out of two of the different fibers, and God knows if those two fibers are on you, and these people all wore dresses. How can you tell what the raiment of a man is from the raiment of a woman, for heaven's sakes?
Well, and plus those same scriptures in Deuteronomy tell you to stone your kid if he's disobedient.
Yes.
And it tells us that Jesus says, you know, if your arm offends, you cut it off. If your eye offends, you gouge it out. That's human mutilation. He also said, unless you drink my blood and eat my flesh, that sounds like cannibalism, you have no part in me. If you take that literally, it says a woman is saved in childbearing. That means if you're barren, you're not saved. I mean, there's so many twists in the semantics of what we call scripture. If you take it literally, and that's why the scripture itself says the literal or the letter or the literal kills. It's the spirit that gives life. We have gotten letter screwed up with logic, and we don't know the logic of God, which we're taught is love, not letter. Jesus came to fulfill the law, and then he abolished it according to the scripture. He abolished the manuscript, the law. It's fulfilled. There's only one law, and that's love. Now, every scripture also says, let everything that hath breath praise the Lord. Does that mean a gay man or woman who breathes is excluded from that passage? For God so loved the cosmos, the whole world. Now, God loves the world, but then the New Testament says, love not the world, neither the things of the world. For he that loves the world is an enemy of God. Well, if we believe that stuff, that's why you can't take it literally. Even the book of Revelation and all the things that John supposedly wrote, I think he was half high because he was frustrated and frightened and hallucinating and dreaming and angry and frightened and still had faith in God but was confused because everything he had given his life to was being destroyed before his very eyes.
And, you know, he went on and he predicted that a tenth part of the city of Jerusalem would be destroyed when, in fact, you know what, 30 years later the entire thing gets leveled.
Yes.
And yet we're going to, you know, we've got these people who want to take it literally. Let me ask you, Bishop, there's so many things I want to ask you, and we've got a chat room here at the Head On Radio Network that is absolutely abuzz, I must tell you. They're begging for me to tell you that we've got headonradionetwork.com, and there's a chat room there, and I think they would all fall silent if you typed in there for a couple of minutes. I know how busy you are, though. But let me ask you, the problems that Americans face, and by Americans, I don't mean the Paris Hilton class, and I'm not trying to be exclusive.
Sure.
But the people who are working two jobs, mom and dad are both working two jobs. They don't have any health care. They don't have adequate child care for their children. They live in an area where the education system is literally crumbling around them. In many instances, the best hope that those children may have might be to sign up for the military and go get in the Sandy meat grinder.
Yeah.
What does the gospel of inclusion do for them?
Well, if we can somehow dispel the myth of a judgmental, angry God who is bigoted, the word communion is common union. Vladimir Lenin took it and took our concept and called it communism.
Mm-hmm.
That's a distortion of a decent principle, shared wealth and shared worth. There would be no such thing. Poverty is artificial, just like death is an illusion. There is enough, all the gold that God ever put in the earth, I heard Oral Roberts say one time, is still in the earth. There's enough water, there's enough food, there's enough everything. But we don't share the wealth because we think that God has preferences. He blesses the rich, curses the poor. He blesses the white, curses the black. He loves the heterosexual, even if they're adulterer, but he hates the homosexual. So, here we come with these dichotomies, this dualism, this good God and bad God. And we say God is a good God, but the devil is a God, is a deity that is in everybody's mind and everybody's head and all over the world and speaks all the languages and wins most of the world. See, that whole the gospel of inclusion says God is no respecter of persons, but he is a respecter of purpose. Original idea. Why we are on this planet. I often say that, and I heard somebody say that, a doctor say that, that the life is a sexually transmitted disease.
Yes.
Disease. It is incurable, and it is ultimately terminal because we all go through the experience we call death, but it's not untreatable. The problem is we all find our different treatments for the dis-ease of living, whether that's drugs or money or sex or religion. We're all trying to manage our pain. But where does the pain come from? The pain comes from a consciousness that you're guilty, delinquent, and in a sense, a criminal. We feel horrible. We try to drink or drown out our guilt consciousness. Institutionalized and or organized religion continues to remind us that we're bad, that God doesn't like us, and that he's making a list, checking it twice, going to find out who's naughty or nice. Who's coming? Jesus Christ or Santa Claus?
It sounds like God's a sadistic Santa Claus.
Absolutely. We get it mixed up. My 80-year-old father, Bob, when I convinced him that his parents, who were backslidden preachers because they died alcoholics and drug addicts, who had preached and fasted and prayed and built out churches, they backslid. I never knew them as, quote-unquote, born-again, saved, sanctified, Holy Ghost-filled Christians. They died sinners, and we went to the funeral knowing that the God we were worshiping was going to torture them the rest of for infinity.
Oh.
When I told my 80-year-old dad and convinced him that his parents were not in hell, he broke down in front of me, Bob. He said, "Are you telling me that my mom and dad are not in hell?" He was the eldest of the seven children, born in abject poverty. I said, "Daddy, the only hell they ever went to was the one they lived in and created for themselves, or we created for them on earth. There's no such thing as the God who eternally tortures. I believe an eternal God who judges, but not a God of eternal judgment." My dad wept like a baby. He said, "Son, you're on to something." And my dad could barely read. He said, "But you've got my support 100%.
That should have been that, and I imagine it was enough to send you well on your way.
Oh my God,
Bishop, what is a serve? I mean, most of us don't have any concept. I mean, this is it sounds like you are literally reinventing faith. What is a service like that is based on or a congregation like that is based on principles like these?
Well, you know, first of all, it's diverse. People tell me, both in mail and in person, in letters and in person, this is the most liberating thing I've ever heard in my life. I feel like the weight of the world has been lifted off my shoulders. I almost feel naked again, like it's got to be something like what Adam and Eve must have felt, if there's any truth to that story, before they felt, and I feel like God is saying to us again, who told you you were naked? Who told you you were less than perfect? Who convinced you that you were poor? That you were lacking. That's a false illusion.
That you were bad.
Yeah, that you were bad.
I recently read, and I have kept you longer than you agreed to be on, and I apologize for that.
Okay.
But I'm shaken to my toenails, Bishop. I want to touch on a couple of subjects before we do end this conversation, and I hope there will be more, quite frankly. First of all, extending from this, who told you you were naked? I read a biography, and I'm not trying to be gossipy here, but I read a biography of one of the most powerful men in America, and that is Dr. James Dobson.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, his daddy was a minister, I would take it, somewhat similar to the tradition from which you come.
Holiness, yeah, the strict evangelical tradition, yes.
And he proudly recounts that at the age of 3, in tears, little James Dobson toddled onto the runner in the center of the sanctuary, and with tears flowing down his eyes, went to the altar, fell on his knees, and accepted Christ. You know the entire, you know this by rote, Bishop.
I was one of them. I did the same thing.
At 3 years old.
Yeah,
I have asked on this program, what kind of hell are parents putting a child through that will convince a 3-year-old not only to conceptualize evil, but to be convinced that they are absolutely awash in it? What does that? What kind of person does it, and what kind of philosophy does it?
It's a culture. It's like the whole Islamic group of religion built in their culture of, you know, when you're a suicide terrorist, you're going to get 77 virgins in heaven. I don't know what the virgins are going to get, but you get 77 virgins when you go to heaven. And we're taught from a little kid, if you're good, I'll give you a sucker. If you're bad, I'm going to give you a spanking. If you're good, you can do this. Be good, and this will happen. Be bad. And again, we put the duality in front of us. And we use that as a carrot in front of the horse and a whip behind it. Who wouldn't follow? You know, you got the, you dangle heaven in front of the world, and you dangle hell behind them and use that as a whip.
That is such a tortured mentality, Bishop, because what you get out of that is Dr. Dobson writing books advocating that grown men take their sons into the shower with them and show them their genitals, literally expose themselves. And it frankly, to use a term out of the court somewhere along, it shocks the conscience. The second question I have for you before we wrap up is the concept of sin. You know, having come from the tradition I come from and you from yours, I understand, you know, for all have sinned and fallen short, come short of the glory of God. Boy, was that just beat over my head the better part of my young life. What is sin? I mean, there's screwing up and there's sin. Hitler, Holocaust, sin. Bank overdraft problem, not sin. Or is, am I wrong?
There's two Greek words. Let me give my another definition I like to give for sin. Sin is a little less than an inappropriate response to a legitimate need. How we get those legitimate needs filled is determines, you know, what would be sin. Now, in Greek, the word is hamartia, which means offense, or hamartano, which means to miss the mark. According to Christian theology, Bob, Jesus took away the ability for anybody to offend God. John Baptist said, "Behold the Lamb of God who taketh away the sin, the offense of the world." But he didn't take away our propensity or capacity to miss the mark. Hamartano. Okay. We all miss the mark. Now, what is that mark? It is conscience. The mark of your own conscience. But the conscience has been affected by the culture, and the culture has been affected by tradition. And traditions go back to man's paganistic, heathenistic fear of a deity. And so you have years and centuries and millennia of false perceptions which have created monstrous doctrines, dogmas, and disciplines that cripple the human race and demean and diminish it to the clones and clowns we've become. So, you know, that goes back, this whole sin thing goes back to that tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that duality. So people say, Bishop Pearson, what if you're wrong? Of course, I always say, well, I don't think I could be ever more wrong than God is right. And if God is right and righteous and created a plan that's going to work, I don't care how many false prophets, preachers, or whatever come along, ultimately God wins. Secondly, I don't think I have a responsibility to be right or wrong because both of the terms are relative. I think I have the responsibility, Bob, to be real. And now, that may not set with somebody's scriptural doctrine, but all I have is my reality, not the accidental Carlton Pearson, the immutable, permanent, essential me. I'm 53. I'm just finding out who the heck I am because spent my life impersonating who I think people want me to be, and that's what most humans do, and you, in the process, either forget who you are or never meet who you are.
When I was a child, I spake as a child.
That's right. You were immature. And I've given my kids some hard lines as babies to protect them from their ignorance. But as they grow older, I don't threaten my kids with a whipping, you know, or putting them on detention.
Because they figured out that you love them so much, you would never willfully or willingly
Precisely.
Harm them.
Precisely.
Well,
religion stays immature.
This could go on, and maybe we can carry this on. I know what you have in front of you. A couple of last questions. I got people hammering me in the chat room right now. Please ask him where we can go to hear this message. That's people want to hear what you are saying, Bishop.
It's amazing. There are not many people saying this, comparatively, preachers and all. And you can't hear it. They're muted. They're all treated like I've been treated. But we're about to go on the air live streaming so that we can go on my website. You can order any www.newdimensions.us. The Dateline program that I was on, you can see it, all my writings, and you can order sermons like the Beauty and the Beast, which talks about this dichotomy of duality, the two atoms. I have a series of messages that I think are, and many of them are brand new, fresh, that I'm just understanding myself. But they're there, and people can order them for minimal amounts and get the DVD or the CD and listen to it. And we have scores of them, but it's www.newdimensions.us.
Well, I have a feeling we'll be you'll be seeing the hit counter spin, because you have excited a lot of people, and one of the, you know, some of the things that I think are an outflowing of this message that you are bringing, which I personally believe is scriptural.
I think
it reinvigorates service to poor people. I think it reinvigorates the dialogue we have as differing members of the human species. I think it changes the way that we look about at a willingness to kill other of God's creatures. I think it speaks to social justice. I think it speaks to workplace justice.
You need to know, Bob, that you have one of the biggest congregations. If you compare all these big media evangelists, you're one too. You have some good news, and your appointment, if you don't like the word anointment, your appointment is just as significant and powerful as any preacher out there, and more. You are more sensible, I can tell by talking to you, and more spiritual, and I can sense a certain presence defined upon you. And you're addressing issues that the pulpits won't. Many of your audience won't darken the door of a church because they see it as irrelevant. You are ministering to them. I don't know whether this is the daily program or whatever, but you are reaching people that even the Billy Grahams won't reach. And I'll just tell you from a preacher standpoint, we envy you because you're out there and you don't have the restraints that we do. You don't have to stick to certain, you know, religious boundaries. Just, you're real. You're just telling your heart. And you know what? You're touching a core in people that has always been there, but they've not had a legitimate reason, or they have not had validation to express it. So I bless you, man.
Thank you, because I got something going on here that started with the conversation when it began, Bishop, that I have not felt in probably 30, I can tell you, in 30 years. And I was preordained, as it were. Walked around got in fights in eighth grade because I dared to take a Bible out and read to kids on the hillside. That's where I come from.
See? It's in you, buddy. It's on you.
And this is, I feel like there's a light on me, and I thank you for bringing that light.
Yeah, well, I feel the warmth of your destiny. I mean, you're big in the earth and important to the universe, and when God opens up a door, and I say God, whatever people call him, God has opened up an audience to you and a voice and an opportunity, and it's very powerful. I appreciate the privilege of sharing with you, and I'll be happy to do it anytime and for as long as you want. And one of these times when I can't do it today, but I'll go into the chat room. I'd love to be confronted with your people and to have dialogue with them.
Oh, I think they would be thrilled. Bishop Carlton Pearson, blessings upon you and thanks to you. I see change in America coming out of what you're talking about.
Well, I certainly hope so, sir, and you're a big part of it, and I salute you and your lovely wife, and let's do it again.
Let's do indeed. We'll be in touch. Take care, and God bless.
Thanks, Bob. I bless you too, sir.
Bye now.
Bye.
We're going to go do the news, because I got to go throw some ice water on me. Man, can you imagine an America that manifests a message like Bishop Pearson just shared? Wow. It could be a blessing upon the planet. Oh my God, I gotta stop. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. At the United Nations, French President Jacques Chirac pledged a total of 2,000 French troops to the International Peacekeeping Force in southern Lebanon. That's after he was assured that they will be able to defend themselves in the case of an attack. In Brussels tomorrow, diplomats will meet with UN Secretary General Kofi Annan for more discussions. Annan is expected to decide soon which country will lead the force, France or Italy. The six world leaders who have been reviewing Iran's response to an incentives package are expected to turn down its offer for talks. That's because the response doesn't indicate one way or the other whether Iran will stop its nuclear work, as Western powers have demanded. Meanwhile, Israel has purchased two more German-made submarines capable of carrying nuclear warheads. In the Gaza Strip, the search continues for two journalists who were kidnapped more than a week ago. The wife of the cameraman urged their captors to let them go, emphasizing that the journalists, quote, are not responsible for the injustices that you speak of, and they should not be punished for them. In Baghdad, the top U.S. commander in Iraq said the country is far from civil war and, quote, there's been great progress in the security front here recently in Baghdad. Across Iraq today, at least 13 people, including three U.S. soldiers, were killed in bombings and shootings. In Afghanistan, coalition forces killed seven suspected al-Qaeda members during a raid on a housing compound today. A 12-year-old boy was also killed and a woman was injured. A coalition official accused al-Qaeda of intentionally putting the woman and child there to, quote, protect their illegal and immoral operations. In Tokyo, a news report indicates there's increased activity at a suspected North Korean nuclear test site, but it's still unclear whether a test is imminent. In the Netherlands, prosecutors say there's no evidence that passengers aboard a Northwest Airlines flight were a terrorist threat. The plane was diverted back to Amsterdam yesterday after the 12 men refused to follow crew instructions. They've all been released from custody. In Washington state, hundreds of firefighters from Arizona and Oregon have joined thousands of others in fighting a major wildfire. It now covers 70 square miles and is threatening hundreds of buildings. And in Kentucky, a judge dropped hiring scandal charges against a Republican governor, Ernie Fletcher. But four of his appointees will resign as part of the settlement.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The third largest drugstore chain in the U.S., Rite Aid, has announced plans to purchase Eckerd and Brooks. It's a more than $2.5 billion cash-in-stock deal. Apple Computer is recalling nearly 2 million Sony laptop batteries due to a fire hazard. That comes soon after Dell announced a similar recall for the same reason. It's expected to cost Sony between $172 and $278 million. Apple Computer has settled a patent dispute with rival Creative Technology over digital music player software and systems. Apple will pay $100 million to the Singapore-based company. BP is again cutting production at its Alaska's Prudhoe Bay oil field. That's reportedly because of technical problems, not pipeline corrosion, as was the case earlier. President Bush says he's ready to sign a free trade deal with Colombia. That comes after the two companies reached an agreement over U.S. beef imports and other agricultural issues. A biotech company says it's come up with a way of making stem cells without destroying the embryo. That could significantly affect the debate surrounding the controversial research. And the Commerce Department says new orders for durable goods went down by more than $5 billion last month. Light sweet crude settled today at $72.36. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 7 points, NASDAQ up 2 points, S&P 500 up 3 points. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty then. So it's 15 minutes after the hour. When you've got something going on like that, well, see, that's the beauty of what we're doing at the Horn. Sometimes clocks go out windows, and they go out for a good reason. Now, the bishop talked about dualities. We are about to go into that duality, because Bishop Pearson has broken away from something that is hateful and fearful and tormented. What we're going to do now, I hope, is have a conversation with John Sugg. We had been scheduled for that last night. I'm trying to get a hand signal or something from Agnes. Okay, this will take place in a couple of minutes. But we're going to talk to John Sugg about Christian Reconstructionism. Because everything, every good thing that you have just heard is opposed by forces of fear and torment that go under the guise of everything, most everything that I, and frankly, Bishop Pearson, have rejected. Do you give yourself a quick master class? Just go and Google Google the last name Rushdoony, Rushdoony, and see where the many tentacled the nature of that man who has gone on to his reward, so to speak. See where it goes. See where those tentacles go. When we talk to John Sugg, you'll get a better idea where they are going right now. Because what he attended is an event in a beautiful place, Toccoa, Georgia, last month. 600 people at American Vision's World View Super Conference 2006. A couple of monsters by the name of Herb Titus and Gary North. And as Mr. Sugg notes in his article, they called for nothing short of the overthrow of the United States of America. They called for something that if you and I were to do it, we would be in a federal, you know, we'd be having lunch with the Unabomber. That's where we'd be. So we will be talking about that in the midst of all of this, story after story after story. And I don't revel in this stuff, because these horrific stories have real life meanings, real life impacts. I've mentioned it a couple of times, really didn't do that much with it. You know, you want family values? Family values is what we're going to be talking about Saturday in Charleston, when West Virginia United, sponsored in large part by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, brings people of like mind together to talk about making things better. We're going to be talking about what families need. Families need support. Families need houses they can afford to pay for. Families need serviceable automobiles with which they can get back and forth to work. Families need food on tables, gasoline in tanks, and they need a little something at the left over at the end of it all. So, you know, maybe you can take the kids to the swimming pool or the ice rink. And so that husbands and wives don't sit there looking daggers at each other. No, we're broke because of you. No, we're broke because of you. Nah, you know, everybody, yeah, it's neither. So that's what we're going to be talking about on Saturday. But meanwhile, there are articles out there. I saw several of them today about how The Christian coalition is fracturing like a like a struck piece of quartz. And today, a story breaking out of southern Missouri, northern Arkansas, about a church in which husband and wife abused little children for decades, having sex with little girls as young as four, and doing it in the name of Jesus. That's where that is. Mr. John Sugg joins us on the phone right now to talk a little bit about the Christian Reconstructionist. Mr. Sugg, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank you, first of all, for joining us. It is a real pleasure. I have followed these people for several years off and on, and frankly, they give me the cold sweats in the middle of the night. Am I unjustified in feeling that way?
No, you're very justified. And, you know, what these people envision is a sort of society that they want to live in. And by the way, their influence extends throughout Washington into the White House. The Christian Coalition, groups like these, the Promise Keepers was founded by a Reconstructionist. Operation Rescue, remember Randall Terry?
I remember him well.
So, I mean, these people are out there, and they have a lot of sway. But the society they envision is somewhat of a cross between Old Testament society with its 600 laws, although I have been to a number of events where these folks are eating pork barbecue. So
that one didn't make the list.
I mean, they don't see, you know, some of the abominations are apparently less abominable than others.
And I'm sure there was plenty of Dacron polyester blend there, too.
Yes, that too. And the other, I mean, Christian Reconstruction, it comes from the Calvinist strain of Christianity, John Calvin, the best known as Presbyterian Church. But Presbyterian Church, of course, has many fine churches. The Presbyterian Church USA is a middle-of-the-road mainstream church. But a lot of the churches in the Calvinist strain are way out there. And if you take a look at what John Calvin was all about, he in essence, ruled. He wasn't the civil government, but he ruled the civil government, which is how they see things happening in Geneva, Switzerland in the 16th century. He was fond of executions. They, during that period, they burned about three dozen women for using magical powers.
And usually when we think about witches getting burned or whatever, we run straight to Torquemada and the Roman Catholic Church, but they don't have an exclusive franchise on
that. Not at all. He had one guy beheaded for calling him a hypocrite. He had a person who objected to basically some of Calvin's beliefs, especially infant baptism. Calvin believed in infant baptism, and this guy voiced objection to that. He was burned, and Calvin had it done in the most delayed way. He was roasted from his feet up.
Oh, my. Oh.
Now, I got interested in Christian Reconstruction when I was doing some articles on capital punishment in Florida, and I came across one of their writers who joyfully longed for the day when there'd be 10,000 executions a year in the United States.
Oof.
And, of course, these would start with the gays. And go on to women who were not chaste before marriage. Men, of course, don't have the same restrictions, you got to realize, because,
well,
you know, Bible.
Well, a guy hadn't got a hymen, so you can't really check.
Well, you know, in the Bible, you know, you had Moses doing, and Noah and David. They all did some pretty kinky stuff, okay?
Yeah, to say the least.
So, anyway, but, you know, you could write these guys off as fringe elements. By the way, they were started by and always associated with the John Birch Society.
Oh, now there's a nice bunch.
And so I just got done with an exchange of emails with the spokesman for their what's called the Chalcedon Foundation, which is their largest organizational element. based in California, and you know he's going on about, you know, I mean, they don't deny it. You know, he basically had nothing but praise for the John Birch Society, which is just as wacko politically as these guys are religiously. I mean, there's a lot about them, and if people go online and Google, let me see, best thing to do is just to Google Mother Jones and John Sugg, and they will come up with an article that I wrote last December as part of a whole package that Mother Jones magazine had on the religious right. And, you know, these guys they're well organized. They've got a lot of money. Whenever you see things like a creationist fight in the schools or stuff like this, that you don't have to dig far before you'll find the Christian Reconstructionists. And they don't always, it's interesting, the guy who founded the movement, a guy named R.J. Rushdoony, claimed he had 40 million followers, but of course, these are mostly people who don't know what they're following.
And it's sort of miracle math made easy, too, isn't it?
Well, no, I think what he was referring to was the Christian right, the breadth of evangelical.
Yeah, everybody in there. Well, let me ask you just one question before we go into the history of Mr. Rushdoony. Should we think about the Christian Reconstructionists in the same terms we'd think of a wacko like David Koresh or Jim Jones in Guyana, just a weird little knot of people sort of incestuously commingling amongst themselves?
Not at all. I mean, these people are not, this is not a cult. First of all, although I consider it far outside the mainstream of Christianity, and I can explain why, you know, but it gets into rather theological stuff. They have taken over a number of Presbyterian denominations. Presbyterian Church in America is largely Reconstructionist.
How about that? D. James Kennedy is said to be a Presbyterian. Is he?
He is a Presbyterian. I met with and spoke with Dr. Kennedy a few months ago for an article. He coyly denied that he was a Reconstructionist. Of course, you don't really have to. It's not. There's not a membership card.
And they don't tattoo it on the back of your neck.
But if you read his books, and I gave him one of his own quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And in this quote, he says, "What we seek is dominion over civil government, the media, schools, so on and so on." I mean, dominionism is another word for what these guys are all about. And that comes from a verse in Genesis where Adam and Eve take dominion of the earth.
Right.
But these people believe that they should have dominion over the planet.
Over you.
Over us, especially what you do in your bedroom. And they're quite up front. If you do not, the only people who could participate as voters, participate in civil society, would be those who were righteous by their standards. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They believe in the reinstitution of slavery.
Sounds like Iran, John.
What?
This sounds like Iran.
Well, there is no, and I would, I've offered debate. Folks, Christian Reconstructionists on the, and the topic of the debate would be there is no organizational difference between the government and Iran and what these guys propose. I refined the wording of it a little bit, but
mm-hmm.
but I mean they would claim that they're different because their God is the right God, which is of course what the Ayatollahs claim, you know. And I think, you know, it's worth noting what the linchpin of their theology is. Most Christianity, I mean, I'm a Christian, you know, I'm a Methodist.
Okay.
And what my church, what most Christians believe is that society is going to, the history is going to keep sort of staggering along. You know, things will get worse and worse, and finally Christ will come and set it all right. That's not what I personally believe, but that's what most denominations believe.
Yeah, that they can.
That's called postmillennialism. The millennia,
mm-hmm.
the millennium will happen after Jesus comes and all this sort of stuff. But what they believe, this guy Rush Dooney came up with this, with a novel concept. By the way, if you think about what most Christians believe, you can see why Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson had a problem, because if you're, if you believe what most Christianity believes, that society, history is just going to keep going on until it ends and Christ comes, well, there's not much of a religion, there's not much of a political opportunity there, because why bother to organize if nothing you do is going to make much of a difference? And Rush Dooney, who followed, you may remember a guy named Francis Schaeffer, who wrote the book The Christian Manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
Schaeffer is the one that sent Protestants into the streets to against abortion. But what Rush Dooney came up with was this idea called postmillennialism, in which their theory is that the United States and then the world have to be conquered for Jesus, their version of Jesus,
mm-hmm.
Before Christ will come in the second coming. Well, that you can organize politically around. It's heretical by any sane Christian standard, but that's what's happened is that all these people like Falwell and Robertson, who both employ Reconstructionists at their universities, and all the rest of them, they have sort of, you know, decided it's not worth they don't want to argue the theological point. They love the political implication of what Rush Dooney came up with. And so basically, Christian Reconstruction has been able to dominate a number of organizations, one called the Council for National Policy, which is all the ultra-right-wing reverends, you know, Phyllis Schlafly, Oliver North is mm-hmm. a member, Rush Dooney was until he died. A lot of the other Reconstructionists are there, too. And this group has extraordinary influence on the Bush regime. And I think you can understand why they like George Bush, because he's going out there and conquering the infidels. Who was the general that said, "My God is better"?
Oh, Jerry Boykin?
Yeah. You know, so we have our jihadis, you know, going out there and waging a holy war.
Well, some of this, too, John, has to do, does it not, with this post-millennial belief that somehow Jesus can be compelled or dragged kicking and screaming into the second coming, doesn't it? I mean, you talk about why they like George Bush. George Bush, there's websites out there that I'm sure you're as familiar with as I am, raptureready.org, I think, or .com, where these people are sitting, well, you know, two more bombs went off today. You know, that's two bombs closer to Jesus.
Well, you've got some theological splits there. The Reconstructionists do not believe in the rapture. And for that matter, in that sense, they're right. You know, the rapture was something that was invented a couple of hundred years ago by a sort of a deranged...
I didn't know that they didn't buy into the rapture.
No, they don't. I'm not sure that they would necessarily say it's absolutely in error, but it's not in the Bible. There is
no.
You know, the biblical verses that are sort of squeezed to get some sort of justification for the rapture, just simply, that's not what it's about. But in all other respects, you're right.
Well, you know, Roy,
the criticism of Christian Reconstruction, that they can dictate the day that Christ returns by conquering, you know, once they succeed in conquering the world, then Jesus is obligated to show up by their theology. And it's, I mean...
Like it's contract-based?
Well...
I mean, I'm not trying to be a smart aleck, John.
Let me tell you something that's funny about these guys. I was at a meeting in Marietta, Georgia, actually a little town called Powder Springs, Georgia, about a year ago. And the head of the... Georgia has always been a big focal point for Christian Reconstruction. You may remember Larry McDonald, the congressman who was killed when the Russians shot down a jetliner.
Yes, yes.
Well, McDonald was a congressman from Marietta. He was, at the same time, the chairman of the John Birch Society and the most prominent figure in Christian Reconstruction. And but anyway, so I was at this meeting in Marietta, and the leader of it, a guy named Gary DeMar, this is a group of people who aren't necessarily Reconstructionists. They're just conservative Christians, okay? And, of course, he's got to be very delicate because he could say things that would be offensive to traditional Christian theology, okay? So he, but what he does, he warns these people not to pay too much attention to the red words in the Bible. In other words, don't pay attention to what Jesus actually said, okay? And see, their problem is they can't reconcile their beliefs with the actual teachings of Christ. You know, Christ taught tolerance. He said, you know, let he who is without guilt throw the first stone. To me, that sounds like a condemnation of capital punishment. These people want the day to be there where they can.
They ache for it. And you mentioned this character named Gary North in your article. This guy
is called Scary Gary,
and for good reason. This guy wants to physically bring back the actual, literal, physical practice of stoning people.
Absolutely, because see, you got to realize these people believe that. I mean, see, they don't believe in Jesus. I mean, they say they do, but they don't. They believe in the Old Testament. Okay, they want an Old Testament patriarchal society. So they believe that capital punishment should be administered by the means described in the Bible, which is stoning, fire, and the sword. Okay, so they would get away none of this weenie stuff like lethal injection. They want to burn people and stone people.
I mean, they say this. I mean, they...
absolutely. Gary North, he wrote one of his most famous quotes was in one of his books. He wrote that. Or as an article, I believe, he wrote that he personally preferred stoning because, one, it would become a community event that everybody could be involved in, and, two, stones are plentiful and cheap. Okay?
God, this, I mean, I'm having a hard time with this,
even
John.
It's more scary than that, I'll tell you, because if you read the article I think he saw in Church and State magazine, he's very clear about the plan. They want to use the political franchise until they have enough power to deny, he says it, it's in there, the exact quote, to deny the political franchise to what he calls the enemies of God.
I don't want to capture their system, I want to replace it.
Right. And so, you know, he, remember one of the, I don't know how old you are, but I'm old enough to remember the 1950s.
Okay? I'm 43, but I've heard the stories.
Okay. You know, back then, you know, one of the things about the Communist Party when I was a little kid in the late 50s, you know, and you heard about the communists, and they were going to use democracy to destroy democracy, a classic Leninist tactic.
Sure.
Okay? Well, that's exactly what these guys are. It's what the John Birch Society has always been about. I mean, John Birch Society has always espoused Leninist tactics while being rabid anti-communist. And that's what these guys, I've written that. I've said, you know, the theocrats with a Leninist tactics.
Well,
anyway,
I mean, do these guys have a chance?
Well, they're winning.
Ah.
I hate to break the news to you, but you know, they're like the black hole on the religious right. Okay, you don't see them. Okay, but their gravity is so immense that they affect all the rest of those people out there. The Southern Baptists theologically could never probably adapt to Christian Reconstruction beliefs, but the Southern Baptists are just following right along the Reconstructionist agenda. The last convention of the Southern Baptists, the big debate was on whether they should pass a resolution to urge all members to withdraw their kids from public schools. Well, Christian Reconstruction has one of their most successful projects has been in homeschooling. They Reconstructionist publishers provide most, maybe close to all of the texts that the Christian homeschoolers use. And you know, there's something, you know, official count right now is that there's something like 1.1 million homeschoolers in the United States. Realistic estimates are that they're about 3 million. But these are 3 million kids who are being taught, you know, a very perverted story about American history. I mean, the Reconstructionist view of American history is that the Founding Fathers wanted to found a Christian nation. They just didn't want the federal government specifying the denomination.
But in order to achieve the thinking like that, you've got to ignore real live, honest-to-goodness history, don't you?
Well, they do. And by the way, you look how close they came to electing a governor of Alabama just a few months ago. Right?
Well, Roy Moore, sure.
Okay.
He's one of them.
At one point, Roy Moore was ahead of the ahead in the polls. I spent several days in Alabama with Roy Moore in December. Now, I asked him, are you a Christian Reconstructionist? And he goes, oh, okay? But then you look at...
Funny, that's not no.
They all have the same books. He probably isn't in the sense that I don't think Roy Moore comes from that very right-wing Calvinist Presbyterian branch of religious wackos. He comes, I believe...
He strikes me as more of a snake handler.
Yeah. I think he's a Baptist, but I forget right now. I mean, I'd have to look back at what I wrote, but Roy Moore was everything the Reconstructionists want. I mean, they can live with like little ideological differences, and they, you know, until they win. The most foolish people among them are the people like the Baptist and the Methodist, the other, you know, the Episcopal. When you see the Episcopalian Church, as it did a month or so ago, you know, almost breaking in half over gay ordination.
Mm-hmm.
People pushing it were Christian Reconstructionists. Rush Dooney's biggest funder was a guy named Almanson in California who is an Episcopal, but very much of a Christian Reconstructionist.
Well, that's the Almanson Foundation, right?
Right. And but, you know, they're drawing these denominations. Actually, they founded one group called the Institute for Religion and Democracy. Sounds like a fine group, right? Nice name.
Yeah, sure.
Well, the entire purpose of that group is to cause schisms in the Methodist Church, the Presbyterian Church USA, and the Episcopal Church. Those are the three biggest mainstream Protestant denominations, I guess what you call more on the liberal side.
Mm-hmm.
But they happen to represent a disproportionate number of congressmen are members of those three denominations.
Have they weaseled their way into the Catholic Church, John?
Well, no, and I don't think you'll see. I mean, don't forget these people are inherently racist. They're inherently nativist, and these are the sort of people that would be more inclined to burn Catholics than they would be to.
And so the Jews don't stand much of a chance either, then.
Well, yeah, but that's true of all the Christian right. I mean, the most foolish people in the world, I think, are the Jews who think that it's great that the Christian Zionists are supporting Israel, because the Christian Zionists just believe that, you know, they love Israel and they hate the Jews, because the Jews are all either going to, you know, get killed at the, you know, final battle or
within some of that. After all is said and done, that these people, after the rapture or whatever it is, whichever coming of Christ, that they actually get to put the Jews to the sword.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think a lot of them look forward to that, actually. But, you know, there's some interesting things that are permeating the religious right that come, to give you some other examples of how Christian Reconstruction is doing this. Stonewall Jackson, you remember him?
Sure.
You
know? West Virginia boy, I might add.
Huh?
West Virginia boy, I might add.
Right, and I guess you could say, you know, in his own way, the bin Laden of his day. They were trying to destroy our nation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but Stonewall Jackson was a very religious man, and he had a chaplain named Dabney, and Dabney wrote some stuff, and Dabney tried to depict the South as a God-directed society. Now, this is a little bit screwy, because although I'm sure the dirt poor farmers in the South were very religious, the ruling elites were not, never were, okay? You know, they were, of course, nominally Christian, but certainly, you know, the area was not the most fervent center for religious belief in America. As a matter of fact, the North was, because the North was powered by abolition in those days. But anyway, so the Christian Reconstructionists have latched onto this and have declared that the South, the antebellum South, was a God-directed society that we should try to pattern future societies after. And they Rush Dooney also found that since the Bible endorsed slavery, that's questionable, and I'm sure you'd never see anything that Jesus said endorsing slavery, and you can argue that God spoke eloquently on slavery when he led the Israelites out of Egypt. But anyway,
right.
They say that slavery is just fine, which, of course, here in the South, you know, a lot of these old unreconstructed guys with Confederate flags flying from their mobile homes, their trailers,
I've seen them.
Love to see slavery back, you know?
But they couldn't afford one.
To fill the job, okay?
Yeah.
Rush Dooney, by the way, was a Holocaust denier, or at least a Holocaust minimizer.
These guys have every card in the deck, don't they?
Yep. So, I mean, they appeal, and by the way, this guy, this spokesman for Reconstruction, who I've been emailing back and forth, it wasn't long before he was starting to go on about world Jewry, you know, and, you know, the old phrases from the 1930s, Henry Ford sort of anti-Semitic school.
How long can it be before you get to the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, you know?
Well, if you read Rush Dooney's Institutes, his major book, I don't really recommend it. It's 900 pages of often gibberish. But, I mean, Rush Dooney also speaks very forcefully of the need to segregate the races. That certainly plays well in some parts of the South. And so, you know, I mean, these people, I mean, you know, they stand for everything that I think most Americans have rejected over the years. But like the rest of the religious right, which they heavily influence anyway, you know, they can use these wedge issues, these flashpoints like abortion and gay rights, you know, to sort of stampede people into the flock. Although I would say I wrote an article that your listeners can find. They Google Armageddon for the religious right and my name, John Sugg, they'll find it. But this one came out about a month ago in our papers here in the Southeast.
Yeah, and you're part of Creative Loafing, right?
Right. And basically what I argue, you know, what I document, if you will, is that there are a number of real severe fracture lines in the religious right nowadays. And I think one example is last February, almost 90 evangelical leaders issued a statement saying that we have to deal with global warming. And all of a sudden was born this environmental evangelical movement. Now, these people, these includes people like Rick Warren, the pastor of Saddlebunch Church.
Saddleback, yeah.
Saddleback Church. I was starting to say Brokeback Church, but that's been wrong. Anyway, Rick Warren is one of them, and a lot of different denominations represented. And, of course, what's most interesting are the people who did not sign it. Falwell, Robertson, Dobson, James Kennedy, what have you. These people, and this has caused a major rupture within the evangelical movement, because most Americans know, I mean, most Americans know that the bullshit, but the BS coming from Rush Limbaugh and Bush and all the rest of these guys, that global warming's a myth, they know it's wrong, okay? You know, it doesn't take science is pretty much in agreement on what's happening. And the evangelicals, I thought was best part about it is that they said, you know, global warming has its most detrimental impact on poor people and poor nations.
Sure.
And Christ has said, you know, attend to the poor. So not only should we, and by the way, there's a great verse in Revelation that says that before Christ comes, it says, hurt not the trees, hurt not the land, hurt not the seas. Okay? And you know, so if you're a Christian, you've got a lot of justification for saying we need to take care of the earth. And so that's caused a major rupture within the evangelical movement. I think a lot of other things. I think the corruption in Washington. I think Tom
Abramoff.
has done more to destroy the foundation of the religious rights.
Well, I noticed where the state of Alabama chapter of the Christian Coalition has filed official papers with the Secretary of State to change their name.
Right. Alabama, Ohio, and Indiana, the Christian Coalition chapters have all split. And a lot of that has to do with our wonderful Georgia boy, Ralph Reed, who I think it's also very interesting that three of the most prominent religious rights, all of them supported by Christian Reconstruction, politicians have been soundly defeated or will be, and that's Roy Moore, Ralph Reed, and by November, Catherine Harris in Florida, who is the darling of Reverend James Kennedy.
And self-destructing before our very eyes.
Right, very much so.
Well, but with I don't think that the defeat of those three individuals is by any means an indicia that the danger posed by these people has somehow passed, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, the danger is still very much there. And I think it's I think what it does show is that Americans really are pretty great people, you know? And like Lincoln said, you know, you can fool some of us some of the time, but, you know, sooner or later we catch on to the deceit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether it's, the religious charlatanism that goes on with these folks, I think most Americans have figured out that not only is the war in Iraq wrong, but it was never right, you know.
And that's a substantial distinction, John.
Right.
You mentioned all these things that they're tied into, so-called young earth creationism. Are they part of and I think the Amundsen Foundation was somewhere along the way, part of the whole gig with the Kansas Board of Education? Is that another one we can add to the list of their defeats?
If not directly involved, they were certainly, you know, they're the ones who support this stuff, you know. I mean, you know, when Cobb County here in Georgia, Marietta, you know, they slapped anti-evolution stickers in biology textbooks.
I remember that.
Years ago. Courts have thrown it out, but it didn't, you know, it doesn't take much to figure out where that's coming from. I mean, Cobb County is the ground zero for Christian Reconstruction. I mean, like I said, they work by indirection a lot, okay? They operate their publishing houses, their think tank, the Chalcedon Institute. They have a number of churches that are openly Reconstructionist, two here in the metro area, Atlanta metro area, but I think that a more realistic count would be about 10. But two of them are very open about where they're.
It blows my mind, this Titus that you discuss in the article. This is a Harvard-trained lawyer, John. How do you get out of Harvard Law School and be one of these people?
Well, Herb Titus told his story at this gathering that I was at in Toccoa, Georgia, and his life was sort of without meaning. I think a lot of us have been there. I've wondered about the meaning of my life a few times. But he was at his house in Oregon one day when Jesus appeared in the rafters. Who am I to doubt a Harvard-educated lawyer? But according to him, Jesus appeared in the rafters.
I think that's time to check into a facility somewhere, but that's me.
But anyway, Herb Titus became affiliated with, I forget what, it's either the Reformed Presbyterian Church or the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. It doesn't really matter because they're both ultra-right wing and both totally dominated by the Christian Reconstructionists. And by the way, it's worth noting, remember who Paul Hill was, the guy, the abortion doctor?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Pensacola, Florida. He was an ordained minister in both of those churches. But
wow.
Anyway, Herb, when you meet him, you know, he looks like a Harvard-educated lawyer. You know, well-tailored, nice guy, pretty friendly to talk to. But he is, among his other achievements, he was a dean of Pat Robertson's law school. And this is one of the law schools, along with Falwell's and others, that are just churning out these young fanatic lawyers. He went from there to representing people in the Ten Commandments cases. He represented Barrow County here in Georgia when they wanted to put Ten Commandments in the courthouse. And, of course, he was Roy Moore's lawyer. Obviously didn't do a very good job at representing Roy Moore, but he was Roy Moore's lawyer.
Well, he didn't start out with the best of clients, but you know, you
well,
can't...
you know, 20, I think it was 27 judges disagreed with Roy Moore. And
but the thing is, with groups like this, John, when 27 judges disagree with you, that's not proof that you're wrong. That's proof that you're right.
Yeah, well, those are just 27 more people for the stake or the stoning.
Yeah, they go on the list.
Yeah, but anyway, where Titus, I think some of his remarks were just, I mean, they're scary when you realize they come from a lawyer. He said that the Second Amendment was written so that we could go out and kill tyrants. But, of course, they define who a tyrant is.
Well, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and it's secular humanists, for example. He said that the First Amendment only applied to criticizing the government, that it did not mean free expression. It only guaranteed that you could criticize the government. But, see, they say that the government should be underneath the church, just like in Iran, okay? So you could criticize the government. You could say, oh, you could call up and say, I'm mad because my trash didn't get picked up today. But you couldn't criticize the church. If you criticize the church or its doctrines or its leaders, you could get executed. Herb is a pretty scary guy himself.
But they've done some of this. Eric Rudolph had some connection to this doctrine, did he not?
He did. It's unclear how much. I'm sure he was influenced by it. You know, they had a couple of problems when you had people like Paul Hill in Florida, Eric Rudolph. They officially excommunicated Paul Hill from the two denominations that he was a pastor in.
And Randall Terry, I had an email exchange with Randall Terry at one point in time where he said, why, heavens no, he never had anything to do with Paul Hill or Eric Rudolph or any advocacy of any level of violence, but he was heart and soul inside Reconstructionism, wasn't he?
He is, and he still is.
Still, yeah.
Basically, his whole campaign for a state Senate seat in Florida is a Reconstructionist platform. By the way, there's even a political party, the Constitution Party.
Oh, I've heard of
them. States that surfaces occasionally. That is Christian Reconstruction. Okay, they call themselves the Constitution Party, and it's basically a front for the John Birch Society and Christian Reconstruction.
Well, John, are these people to be actively opposed, or if we ignore them, do they go away? If we put Democrats in power, do we defang them? I've read about this before, but I thought your article really tied a lot of it together very well.
My recommendation, I mean, see, it's what Jesus said, the truth will make you free. You know, the truth about these people needs to be told. You know, it's very interesting, but here in Atlanta, the Atlanta metro area, okay, mm-hmm. we have one of the nation's 20 largest newspapers, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, mm-hmm. okay? Christian Reconstruction has been largely based here for several decades. Larry McDonald was a prime spokesman for a long time. Reconstructionists were behind the move in one of the counties around here. They passed an anti-gay resolution before the 1996 Olympics. They didn't want any gay athletes coming to their county. Okay, that was Christian Reconstruction. Yet the Atlanta Journal-Constitution has had one article that in all these years that dealt with Christian Reconstruction as a serious subject. And that was a long, long time ago, well over a decade ago. And the media, by and large, it's one of those subjects that they're afraid of. You know, you know, they'll report on the religious right to the extent that, you know, it doesn't get too controversial, but they're not going to attack, you know, what these people believe. I did an experiment. A professor at the University of Georgia sort of cued me into this, but he said, drive around North Georgia and count the signs in front of churches that have a Reconstructionist message. And I have a house up in North Georgia, so I started counting. And it's, you know, this is a movement that has spread through lots of churches. You know, 100 years ago, newspapers would have, you know, on Monday, they ran the sermon, so you knew what the Presbyterians thought and the Baptists thought and the Catholics and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Newspapers are afraid to tackle religion in a critical way nowadays, so they put church news in there, who's the new pastor at the church. But they won't tell you what the pastor believes. And
because they're afraid that the faithful will then turn around and take it out on their advertisers.
Well, yeah, that. And you know, the media is more afraid of the religious right than Democrats are, you know.
Well, the fact of the matter is, I've watched...
Until, you know, our papers, I've done a number of things. There's a writer named Fred Clarkson, who is perhaps the most prolific writer on Christian Reconstruction. He's written numerous articles and a book. Mother Jones Magazine had that whole issue in December that was focused on the religious right, and I had one of the longer articles, and I talked about Christian Reconstruction. And there are other people who are starting to notice this, but again, for the most part, you know, they thrive because they're invisible to the great mass of America. And you know that, you know, there are a lot of parallels with how the old Communist Party in America was depicted. You know, shadowy people who owed their ultimate allegiance to their party and would do anything they were told. Well, that's what these Christian Reconstructionists are.
But the media is scared to death of them because I haven't seen any exposés on CNN or MSNBC or any of the mainstream networks. And while there's plenty of time for Kira Phillips to bring on Tim LaHaye and Jenkins to talk about whether or not Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's going to make Jesus come, I haven't seen you there, John.
No. Well, I'll tell you, you know, just like it took the British media to tell us about the Downing Street memo and so much else about the Iraq War, I just spent a day with some British television journalists who were doing a documentary on this twice, one with an independent producer, once with the BBC. And so, you know, at least the BBC will take it seriously. And by the way, in England, they have good reason to worry about Christian Reconstructionists. They know what type of government they would run because they had Oliver Cromwell. Who, you know, this the Puritans. These mm-hmm. were, this is the same sort of, this is what...
The Puritans themselves had Calvinist flavoring, didn't they?
They were Calvinist.
Yeah.
They were essentially the same right-wing strain of Calvinism that these people are. I mean, there have been some theological refinements, but that's what these guys want. And by the way, you know, you were asking about six-day... creationism, yes, that's what they believe. If you believe anything else, it's off to the gallows with you.
Yeah, the intelligent design people get killed by these folks.
Yeah, intelligent design is just as heretical, maybe even more so. You know, it's one thing to be evil, it's another thing to compromise with evil, and the intelligent designers are sort of more despicable because they compromise with evil, and according to the Reconstructionists. But, you know, these people are anti-science, anti-intellectualism, and you know, they unfortunately they have such a you know, there are a lot of them, and they're creating more. You know, each month that goes by, you hear more about. You know, I follow this and I look at the churches and the rallies, they sponsored a series throughout the United States. By the way, my phone's going dead.
Oh, sorry.
So I may have to leave you soon. But throughout the, you know, across the nation last summer, there were these Reclaim America rally.
Yep.
Those were Reconstructionist rallies.
Well, John, I don't want to lose you in mid-sentence. Let me thank you so much for joining us, and I look forward to reading more of your writing, and hope to hear from you again sometime.
Well, keep up the good work yourself, and anytime I can help out, I'd be glad to talk about religion and Southern politics.
All right, thanks a lot. You take care, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye. John Sugg, one of the editors of Creative Loafing. The name of the article, Public Stoning, Not Just for the Taliban Anymore. We're gonna take a little break, and then this has been an interview kind of night. We've got a little less than an hour left. If you'd like to get something said, for heaven's sakes, say it. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is a quality news network. Senior diplomats say world powers will probably reject Iran's offer for talks about its uranium enrichment program. That counteroffer was made in its long-awaited response to an incentives program aimed at stopping the work. There is no mention one way or the other on whether it will be stopped as demanded. The UN Security Council has set an August 31st deadline for Iran to freeze enrichment before taking action, including economic and political sanctions. At the United Nations today, French President Jacques Chirac pledged a total of 2,000 French troops to the International Peacekeeping Force in southern Lebanon. He boosted the number after receiving assurances that the troops would be able to defend themselves in the case of an attack. Diplomats will meet with UN Secretary General Kofi Annan in Brussels tomorrow for more discussions on the peacekeeping force. Annan is expected to be asked to decide whether France or Italy will lead that force. In the Gaza Strip today, Israeli forces captured a Hamas militant leader and killed his brother in an early morning raid. Later, five people were injured when Israeli warplanes targeted the home of the suspected militant leader. Meanwhile, the search continues for two missing journalists who were taken hostage more than a week ago. In Baghdad, the top U.S. commander in Iraq said the country is far from civil war and great progress on the security front has been made in Baghdad. Meanwhile, at least 13 people, including at least two U.S. soldiers, were killed in violence across the country, four of them in Baghdad. In Afghanistan, coalition forces killed seven suspected al-Qaeda members during a raid on a housing compound. A 12-year-old boy was also killed and a woman was injured. A coalition official accused al-Qaeda of putting the woman and child there as shields. The Associated Press reports that the Army is reviewing the death of American soldiers in Iraq, Afghanistan, and nearby countries. Officials say they want to make sure the soldiers' families were given accurate information. In Washington, the FDA has ruled women 18 years and older do not have to get a prescription for the so-called morning-after pill. Two Democratic senators later said they would drop their objections over President Bush's nomination for the head of the FDA. Astronomers have kicked Pluto out of the solar system. They say it doesn't meet the standards for a full-fledged planet and will now be considered a dwarf planet. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
It's the eve of reckoning for Northwest Airlines. Unless a federal judge intervenes, its flight attendants say they'll go on unannounced strikes starting around 9 o'clock tomorrow night. The Commerce Department reports that new home sales in July fell by 4.3%. Also in July, the median price of a new home was $230,000. The Commerce Department also reports that new orders for durable goods went down by $5.3 billion last month. Freddie Mac reports that average interest rates on 30-year mortgages have fallen for the fifth straight week. They now average 6.48%. The third largest drugstore chain in the U.S., Rite Aid, has announced it will purchase Eckerd & Brooks. It's a more than $2.5 billion cash-in-stock deal. Apple Computer is recalling nearly 2 million Sony laptop batteries due to a fire hazard. That comes soon after Dell announced a similar recall for the same reason. Those recalls could cost Sony up to $278 million. Apple Computer has settled a patent dispute with Creative Technology over digital music player software and systems. Apple will pay $100 million to the Singapore-based company. And BP is again cutting production at its Prado Bay oil field because of technical problems. Light sweet crude settled today at $72.36. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 7 points, NASDAQ up 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Coming up on 12 minutes after the hour. What a week this has been. Wow. Great conversations. This is the opportunity that the Head On Radio Network gives us. Now, what kind of conclusions do you draw? I mean, is there anything more distinct than what you heard from Bishop Pearson and the monstrous evil that was just described to you by John Sugg? I'm not going to draw your conclusions for you. It's not my job. I can't draw. But it would seem to me that the choices are obvious. Now, what comes into play is how do you oppose the monsters of Christian Reconstructionism? Because just like I told you, they've got their tentacles everywhere. Did the little fact just slide right by, or did you catch it when John noted that almost all of the homeschool textbooks are written by Christian Reconstructionists? Get the kids, get them early. Come here, boy. First one's free. You know how it goes. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend David calls in from Middle Tennessee, and we haven't heard from David in a long time. How you doing, David?
Well, I was doing real well, Bob, up until I heard I might have to follow those two calls. Good grief. You've just had great conversation, and we have just heard 2 hours of the most important talk anybody has ever put on radio, and now then I've got to stumble up to the microphone. it reminds me of my favorite Charlie Brown panel where they're looking at clouds, and Charlie says, "Gee, what do you see?" And the little girl says, and she launches into this long explanation of how she sees the entirety of Greek mythology parading across the sky as they lie on their backs looking up, and Charlie says, "I was going to talk about a horsey and a ducky, but I think I'll let you go on."
Well, yeah, and that's kind of my life, David, because
your life.
No, my great reference is the Great Pumpkin, where, you know, what did you get? Oh, I got a Melomar. What did you get? I got a peanut butter cup. What did you get? I got a Baby Ruth. What did you get? I got a Hershey bar. What did you get, Charlie? I got a rock.
Well, I'm gonna offer up a few horsey and ducky allegations or allegories. Seriously, listeners, and you guys in the chat room. The good bishop is at a very important juncture for all of America, and what Mr. Sugg spoke about, it's the perfect flip of the coin. Don't flip it. Pick the right side. It's an either-or discussion. Now, moving on to something a little lighter. I'm going to put some completely goofy distance between these two quality hours and whoever comes next. So the next guy ought to give me a big thanks. did you talk in the last couple of days about a fellow named Henry Rollins and his experience in Australia?
No, I have not. Share, please.
And you know who Henry Rollins is.
Yeah.
Lord knows I do. Should I give, like, 10 seconds, 15 seconds to explain Henry to the rest
of
the world?
Yeah, do the Reader's Digest, you know, thing.
Southern California, bright young man, hated school, found punk rock, joined a band. The next thing you know, that band was Black Flag, one of the three, maybe five most influential punk bands ever to be created. Henry Rollins was not prone to drugs. He read voraciously, is still a bodybuilder. Loved performance art. His upper body has more tattooing on it than bare skin, but if Henry Rollins is in a room of any 10 people, bet on him being the best red guy in the room. So after his Black Flag experiences in a punk rock band, he formed his own situation, the Henry Rollins Band, and he became something of a cult personality because he was so well-spoken. So now that's the background of it.
Okay.
Henry's on an airplane. Henry is flying from the United States. Oh, and one other background item. Henry lives a very simple life. Henry still lives in the house he bought in Southern California 20 years ago. You know, fame, wealth don't matter to Henry. So Henry's on this plane. He's flying to Australia from Southern California. He's going to do a speaking, a reading, whatever else. Henry is intensely political. So to make sure he remains well-read, he's reading a book. The cover of the book bears the title. The title is Jihad. And it's got appropriate graphics because somebody that, you know, is walking through a Barnes and Noble would like to go, maybe that's interesting. The way the story unfolded was a passenger next to Henry reported it to the captain. The captain reported it to the Australian authorities, and before Henry could leave the airport, Henry Rollins had to spend several quality hours with Australian police.
Oh, my God. Because he looks like the shoe bomber.
No, he doesn't look like the shoe bomber. Henry gives himself a buzz cut once a month. And I will.
Whether he needs it or not.
Well, and I'll betray a con. I'll be a little bit of a, you know, fame seeker here because of my association with fans. I've met Henry. You know, Henry's got this lifestyle that's his and his alone. He's a bodybuilder. He gives himself a buzz cut once a month. He very seldom wears anything but a T-shirt, unless it's really, really cold. But, you know, sitting on an airplane, there's all this ink, and he's reading a book called Jihad. Well, the book is a bestseller written by a gentleman named Ahmed Rashid. He's a Pulitzer Prize quality writer. And all in this screwball, Bush America, fear-mongering world we live in right now, created by the Roves and the Cheneys and the Norquists and all the rest of them, is for a guy that has tattoos and a short haircut to be sitting in probably, if I know Henry, probably in, you know, just tourist, you know, probably in just regular other person's seat, reading a book called Jihad, and it gets him a few hours with the Australian police. That's how far, the fear-mongering, that's how goofy, that's how silly. And this writer fellow, this is not a radical writer. Mr. Rashid wrote a book called Al-Qaeda. It came out in 2000. It's used by the U.S. military for guys like go through Fort Drum in New York State, the 10th Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Upon their graduation, before they go anywhere, if they're going to the Middle East, they're handed a book as required reading. While you guys make your way to your station, read this. It's Mr. Rashid's book. Al-Qaeda. So Henry's just reading an even-handed awareness rating book, and it gets in several hours with the Australian authority. That's how far our nation has sunk as a cowardly bunch of, well, let's not go there.
Well, but this, David, it would be, you know, where am I going with this? The Nazis burned books. We, however, have a greater sense of refinement. We're not going to burn them. We're just going to make sure that you understand that there are books that, if they are seen in your possession, are going to cause you a great deal of inconvenience and consternation. I would suggest that the latter tactic is far more effective than burning them. Banned in Boston works wonders on a book.
Well, of course. And it's, you know, I've heard Ahmed Rashid interviewed twice. He's the most even-handed speaker, not unlike the two speakers you've had tonight. It's research. It's honest, hard work revealing facts. Of course the Bush administration is nervous if someone's reading that sort of book, but just the simple word on a book jacket. Just the simple word.
Yeah, it's not the contents. I mean, this same weird right-wing fundamentalist crowd, David, once included on its book, on its list of naughty books that must be banned from all the libraries in the world, a book called Making It in the Kitchen with Mary. They had it on their pornography list. It was a cookbook, David.
Well, of course it was. It's so disgusting. But now and again, the American way is revealed as being a big mistake. Just tonight on the newscast that you're so good to run at the top of the hour, the Sony Corporation. Sony's a made-up name, like Kodak. It's really another name that I'm not really capable of pronouncing. That's a Japanese name, huge electronics firm. I don't know about you, but in the 70s and 80s, if you owned anything that said Sony on it, you knew you had the best. And as other Japanese competitors came along, and as Korean competitors came along, as Taiwanese competitors came along, Sony got nervous, and Sony broke ranks. Sony hired, about 8 years ago, they hired American marketing and production management people. And now then, Sony owns, has been given, cannot shake for 15 years, the most downgraded record for quality and customer support in the electronics industry. And it happened because they went and hired a bunch of very young, market as in the stock market oriented American advertising purchasers. So when the worst of the worst American production and management and marketing techniques were applied to a giant, Sony, really, the one that invented to a great extent the giant, well thought of electronics firm, adopted the American short-term, think about the quarter, let's just make money this quarter, we'll think about next quarter. Well, now then, they're going to have to buy back, what did they say, $150 million worth of computer batteries, less, you know.
Because they catch fire.
Yeah, because somebody's pants are going to be on fire in Omaha trying to type out an Excel spreadsheet to go to an insurance adjuster's convention the next morning. Well, that's going to do them a lot of good. Well, you know, and we're making the same mistakes in Iraq. It's short-sighted. It's foolish. It's just...
Well, but, you know, bear in mind, the world is catching our little disease, David, and I think that's part of the thesis that I draw from what you said. This was a flight where Henry Rollins winds up talking to the Aussie guys and tax collectors and the funny hats. Well, I got another story here.
He spent about an hour, and it was very nice, and he said, oh, geez, what do you guys want? And after a while, they were going, you know, really, you shouldn't be here. this is all foolish. We're very sorry, Mr. Rollins. Have a nice day in Australia.
Well, Dateline Haarlem, Netherlands. Prosecutors said Thursday they found no evidence of a terrorist threat aboard a Northwest Airlines flight to India that returned to Amsterdam, and they are releasing all 12 passengers arrested after the emergency landing. The men, all Indian nationals, okay, wrong color skin, had aroused suspicions on flight NW0042 to Bombay because they had, wait for it, this isn't a book called Jihad, all right? No, this is a bunch of Indian nationals carrying, quote, a large number of cell phones, laptops, and hard drives, and refused to follow the crew's instructions.
And the crew was speaking in...
God only knows. Northwest Airlines, I'm thinking English.
Well, of course they were. And where is the greatest high-tech explosion of real innovative application of existing systems?
These are Indian nationals with computers. They get a computer in the cradle. They are committed to knowledge and understanding and the advancement and learning, and the more you learn, the better. Oh, my God.
You know, rather than working in a call center like your mother is right now, little three-year-old, learn how to do research because the Americans don't think it pays. In a scant 15 to 18 to 20 years, we will have amassed all of the things that really matter in research. And the engine will have come from here. It won't be an American engine pulling this little train that you're a lousy passenger on. You're going to build a locomotive. Hello?
The men were between 25 and 35 years old, David, and they were speaking Urdu.
A 25-year-old not listening to a flight attendant. Well, there's a first.
Yeah, I mean... I've never checked my personal flotation device to this day, and God knows I flew all over the country before college trying to figure out where I was going to go, and I didn't pay attention to her, and she was speaking my own language.
Hell, you barely buckled your belt. Let's not get any better.
Some of them, I mean, I'm reading this story. This is all, let me check here just real quick. Is it AP? Yeah, it's AP. So, you know, it's this breathless American writing about how, let's see, the 12th aroused suspicion for other unspecified reasons. And, some had beards, some wore a shalwar kameez, a long shirt and baggy pants commonly worn by South Asian Muslims. We're all gonna die!
We are so foolish and so ignorant. Just but
ignorant. Oh, no, no, oh, I'm sorry, I hadn't read the whole thing before. Well, you're a prophet, dude.
They were not fastening seatbelts despite being told to do so by the airline staff.
They were too busy writing code at five lines a minute.
Yeah, they were writing Microsoft Vista.
They were trying to save Vista so that damn Paul Allen could get it out by the end of the year, even though everybody in Seattle has got their head up there.
Yeah.
Doesn't know how to fix it. Oh, that's it. Oh, gee whiz. We may have figured it out, Bob.
Well, you know, it's... I don't have the ego, David, to sit here and say that I've got answers or that I've got it. But you know, when I'm sitting here with my kids, because my kids are our kids, Agnes, our kids have a certain amount of tune-in to them. They get stuff... I mean, they got, like... wireless internet in their head or something. They know cool stuff, and they come, hey, Dad, let's go look at that. And we went, and I was talking with Luke from Knoxville about this a night or two ago. Hey, Dad, we got to watch this. And it's guys dropping Mentos into Diet Coke bottles, and there's your binary explosive plot. And here is scary guy, scary man.
Bob, don't let them do the mental thing in the house at work.
It doesn't. No. I have resisted mightily the attempt to do it at all, but I got a feeling there's going to be a Coke bottle going into the middle of the road here pretty soon.
Way away from the house. Make sure it can't turn over.
But the point here is that we're just average Joe Americans. And we're about six moves ahead on the chessboard of goobers that make six-digit salaries sitting down in the bowels of the National Security Administration. I am serving my country. Wah!
Bob, you know why that is? Let me offer one answer, because it's unfair of me to throw out such a broad-spectrum question. They're hanging on to it because the right, quote-unquote, answer is the one that makes money for their constituency. Their constituency wants to hold on to the equivalent of the buggy whip because it makes money or keeps them in power. It has nothing to do with what's going on around them now or in the future. They hang on to what they put out there because the old ways they think can still make money for a little while longer and prop up their evil owners.
Seems to make sense to me.
I was afraid it would. Well, there's a bottom of an hour coming, and I've been lucky enough to barge in on what was an absolutely sterling first 2 hours. Good grief. The bishop, the fellow from Georgia, that's golden. All the listeners should realize this can never happen right now anywhere else but right here. And I'm not sure it'll ever happen again anywhere else. But it happened here. It happened in a way that we could all hear it. And, boy, are we ever blessed. So thank you again, Bob.
Thank you, David. It's you guys. It's all you guys.
It isn't us. And it's a lot of fun. Take care of yourself, Bob.
Bye now. Let's take. Is that take a break, dear? Okay. Agnes says take a break. So, you know, when Agnes is happy, we're all happy. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
There are places I remember.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
Twenty minutes or so remaining in the program. Straight to the phones. Dave has been waiting, calling from Humboldt County, California. Hey, Dave, thanks for calling.
My pleasure, Bob. I've come to appreciate your program a lot. One of the things I have also appreciated is living in a country in which we're free to be a Southern Baptist or a Hindu or a Russian Orthodox or an atheist or a Baha'i. We've had pretty much freedom to believe what we want. And now I think one of the big lies that's coming along with the cons right now is the lie that the founding fathers of America had it in mind for this to be a born-again, fundamentalist, Christian religion, a religion that loves stem cells and hates gays. Reality is that the founding fathers certainly Washington and Franklin and Jefferson, Madison, they wanted nothing more than to keep a great deal of distance between religions and to government. And they tried to write that in every way they could. They were, I guess, probably deists. Franklin probably an agnostic. Maybe all of them in a sense. They felt if there was a God, but God moved on. They were not in certainly...
Well, agnosticism at that point in time, I don't think was formally named. And the word they gave it was, you're absolutely correct, deism.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the reference to nature and nature's God in the Declaration of Independence.
Right, right. And there was quite a bit of squabble among some of the founding fathers how that should be phrased. And that was a compromise on the part of Jefferson, who wanted not to make reference to any deity being over the... government of the United States, the people. But I value that a lot, and I see so many times on some of the chats and whatnot, the fundamentalists now that are speaking for the neocons, you know, and whatever religion is behind what these crazy people are about, I would want to bail out the nearest window of the chapel if I were in there with them. I want not to be any part of what they think religion is.
Well, if you partake of faiths, Dave, that admit of the existence of demons at work in the world, then it's hard to compare, say the words of someone who professes to be a Christian as compared with the words of Christ, and not come out that these people are demons, or at least demon possessed. I don't go in for that kind of thing myself, but I do go in for concepts of it's like what the bishop was talking about. The difference between missing the mark and completely violating the rules of any sort of sane conscience. And these people are the latter of that. If you stop long enough to imagine an America ruled by the likes of these Reconstructionist goonies, that's, frankly, and you know me, Mr. Peacenik, that's worth going to war over. because they, and that's the thing I keep trying to get out there, they look for the opportunity to go to war with me, with you, with decent human beings who are only concerned with the well-being of other human beings. They're concerned with the sex life of other human beings and how they pray and which way they pray and to whom they pray and how often they pray, but they're not concerned with their own prayers.
Well, I don't know if we can get a definite answer, but I often find myself asking the question of, are these people real, or have they come to the conclusion that religion is the opiate of the masses? It's a way that they can control through fears and biases, prejudices and whatnot. That would be totally consistent with what they're all about on other fronts. So, and I wonder, you know, could a delay, could a Rove, could Cheney, could people who think with such disregard for the well-being of people actually be motivated out of some true religious sentiment? And if so, what in the world kind of religion have they got?
Well, I go back and forth on this. I believe, you know, when it comes to compelling the return of Jesus by getting a few more babies slaughtered with American-made bombs dropped by American-made planes operated by Israeli pilots over Beirut, yeah, I think they think that, okay, well, that's the last bomb, got to come down now. You know, it's magic. You know, somebody rubbed the genie's lamp. They believe that stuff. But they also believe that it affords them an opportunity to get dirty, stinking, filthy, just blistering rich in the process.
Yeah.
And that combination is toxic, and that combination is fatal, Dave.
Unless they've had somebody edit for them a very special kind of a Bible, there's an awful lot that they must have to blind themselves to. You know, looking for some strange passage somewhere that justifies one of their bizarre thoughts, but everything to do with charity and caring for those who have not and being there for those in prison and poor.
But these are people who, psychologically speaking, and I think my our good friend the psychologist Rick Goodner down in Texas would probably agree, these are people who were most likely potty trained at gunpoint, okay? So rules are going to be what it is for them. And they don't see charity as a rule. They don't see caring for the poor as a rule. They are rule oriented. Their ids are completely suppressed, if you want to get kind of Freudian about it. And so unless it's literally, you know, that's why the Ten Commandments appeal to them, because it is a rule that is carved in stone, you know, and you know, it's the fact of the stone and not the meaning of the rule.
But among those commandments are things like thou shalt not kill. And what are they doing in these?
Sure. But then, you know, it's rules for other people.
Yeah.
You know, it's thou shalt keep my commandments. Boy, they love that, you know. But they gloss over thou shalt not commit adultery, nor covet thou thy neighbor's yada, 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 nor covet thou his. And they forgot about the part about not coveting the petroleum reserves.
Mm.
But
see that.
But what I'm getting at here, most of, and John Sugg pointed it out very well as well, Dave, these people are obsessed mostly with the more hateful, restrictive portions of the Old Testament. They can't get, I mean, you know, Jesus, you know, never, you know, he said somewhere, behold, I come with a sword or some such as that. They want him to come with a machine gun now. They want high-tech Jesus. And they want him mean. You know, it's no longer for them. You know, I've joked about I want to read their Bible because it's for them. It's no longer suffer the little children to come unto me. It is, come on, y'all, let's go make them little children suffer. That's how you wind up with Beirut.
And that makes me wonder how they, you know, there's a very evil core about them. And do they have a special edited holy book that they say justifies their kind of crazy thinking?
Well, it's not specially edited. It's specially understood. It's sort of like Joseph Smith unearthing the tablets in upstate New York and having to put on the special glasses to be able to read them. They've got special glasses for reading the Bible so that they can look and say, wow, Peter owned a sword, therefore it's okay to slaughter Iraq. Or Jesus said, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. And suddenly, I mean, I'm not kidding. That was the justification offered by the Southern Baptist Convention for giving the go-ahead to George Bush to kill a tenth of a million people, Dave.
Well, I love your program, and I love the Head-On Radio Talk Network, and you're very generous with your time, and I don't know, you maybe have somebody else trying to get in, so I really appreciate you affording people the opportunity to say what's on their mind.
Well, that's what we have to be about, Dave. I mean, we're not kidding. It was early on when I sort of started this program that I started talking about not talk radio, but conversation radio.
Yeah, yeah, and you do that. We're talking back and forth. It isn't get your sentence out, we got 30 seconds.
Right, and I don't, you know, nothing drives me crazier than knowing that some poor nervous soul has picked up the phone and has a notepad in their hand and has jotted down notes like bullet points that they have to hit as fast as possible because somehow or another, Agnes has her finger on the trigger and is ready to cut you. America has stuff that America wants to say, Dave. And I've got to have time, and we on the horn have to have time to listen to it.
Well, you're one who is helping to get it out of what a really dreadful thing we're up against right now in Washington. And I hope you can get it to as many people as can possibly listen.
You would be amazed to know how fast this is growing. It boggles my mind, Dave.
You've thrown a rock in the river and the ripples go far.
I hope it's a big enough ripple that, I want to throw a rock in the Mississippi.
Yeah.
You take care, Dave.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. Bye now. About 14 minutes before the hour and time enough to get to a couple of things that I had on the list that I don't want to leave undone. And a reminder, tomorrow night we will be talking with yet another inspiring individual. Tomorrow night we're going to be talking to Maria Gonneau. Maria lives in Bob White, West Virginia. Maria has suffered firsthand, and I do mean suffered, the depredations of mountain range removal. And we're going to be talking about something that is coming out very, very quickly. A Patchwork Films release. A DVD, a three-film DVD called The Mountain Mourning Collection. And that's mourning with a U. The sackcloth and ashes kind of mourning. But Maria will be joining us tomorrow evening, and she's a wonderful, wonderful individual to chat with. And I hope you'll be around for that. Now, I've got an email in the box here that I wanted to make sure I shared with you because I go back and forth. I'd like to, read you something funny or get you giggling or... But so often, and I don't mean to be schleprock. Schleprock! And it doesn't... And it's a parade of... It's a shower of, and it bears on me, and I know it bears on you, but somehow or another, we have to know about this because, one of the reasons, I mean, I try to read everything that comes through my email box that you guys send me. Because even if I don't get to it on the show, I know that it is somehow going to inform the way that I look at things. And it's going to speak. I never know when I'm going to be out and about, and somebody's going to mention something, and something's going to tie in. And this is not a linear life, and it's not a linear world. This is, the magnificence of the spider who sits on one end of the web, and at the furthest point away, a little bug flies in, and the whole thing vibrates, and the spider knows. And I'm not a spider, but that web is a masterpiece of informational connectivity. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to know that there were, really highfalutin computer engineers out there who just sit there at night on the porch looking at spider webs going, damn, if I could build me an operating system like that, I'd have it whooped. But I mean, that's the way it has to be. So yeah, I've got, and I'm, you know, if it's negative, if that's how you take it, no, it's information, and it's positive because it is a means by which your eyes are open, and a means by which we are empowered to go out and point, you know, sorry, don't want to get all really, it's about naming the demons, because you have to name the demon before you can cast it out. Here's a demon. Well, you know who the demon is. Okay, back up. This is sounding just a little too... No. Ever had a loved one in a nursing home? Our friend Sue down on Big Coal River sent me this story, and it's... You know, it's another one of those rubber brick moments. Man, when we got funded, when we've got the kind of funding that we can send you guys promotional items, and I really want to do this. I want rubber bricks. Because I know you guys want to throw them as badly as I do. No, if you've got a loved one in a nursing home, Dateline Washington. Many health care providers will have to make do next month without a government paycheck or two. The Bush administration says it will not make any Medicare reimbursements to hospitals, doctors, and scores of other providers. You catching this, Agnes? During the last 9 days of the current budget year from September 22nd to 30th, Congress ordered the hold. See, that's such sterile language. Congress ordered the hold. I wonder if Congress ordered the hold before they went down and worked out in the kayak pool in the basement of the Capitol, or did Congress order the hold before they went off to a handball or a squash or a racquetball match, or maybe polo? Congress did not order the hold because Congress... No. Damn it. The Republican Party ordered the hold. What did we hear last night about responsibility? I'm going to hold them responsible. You got a loved one in the hospital in late September? You know, because the government withholds the Medicare money, and the next thing, you know, will there be shortages of medicine? I don't know. Will there be shortages of doctors? I don't know. I hope not. The providers taking care of older people and the disabled will get paid in full after the new budget year begins October 1st. They should not, however, count on any interest on the amount they're owed. What happens to you when you don't pay your power bill? I'm sorry, I can't pay your power bill until after the fiscal year begins. Well, you sit your ass in the dark then. And everything in the freezer melts and rots. But not the Republican government. No, they're going to put old people in beds who can't pee by themselves on hold while they continue to shell out $29 a day to Halliburton per soldier to feed them rotten meat. Remember the Pentagon audits? Forgot those, didn't you? No, you didn't forget them. Yeah, they just slipped off the... Slipped off the RAM and onto the hard drive. But you can recall it. Now, Jill Cosney, who is a Senate Finance Committee spokeswoman, no, she is a spokesman for the Republican majority on the Senate Finance Committee. By delaying payments, the government moves $5.2 billion in Medicare expenses to next year's budget rather than the current one. She said that the alternative was to cut reimbursements to providers this year. No, hell no, don't let them lie to you like that. because they don't cut anything out from the war in Iraq.
Oh, he doesn't support the troops.
Oh, I support the troops. I want the troops home. No, they'll pass a continuing resolution. But you see, they got a debt problem. And by the way, I've been watching my little weirdo right-wing sites, and they are having a four-square hissy about the housing market. Because their conservative government is about to come down around their ears. Big question, how in heaven's name are they going to blame this on Bill Clinton? And there's some babble in here somewhere about how, well, you know, there is precedent for doing this. This was done a couple of times in the early 80s. Who was president in the early 80s? Ronald Reagan, who literally pulled people off of iron lungs. So that's our last story for the night. Thank you for sharing that with us, Sue. Are you embarrassed by that? Because you see, the Republican Congress, whether you like it or not, did that in your name. Right? Right. They did that in your name. In other words, you're cutting off the money to the old people in the beds. You don't like it? Well, of course you're not going to vote for some Republican in the November election. Of course you're not. You're liberal. You're progressive. But it was done in your name, and somehow or another, you and I have a mutual responsibility to try to stop some Republican by convincing them, by disputing with them, by giving them the facts. Well, they'll get paid. That's not the point. That's not the America we live in. We must effect change in November. At least that's how I see things. Thank you all for joining Agnes and me tonight. I hope you got as much out of the evening as I did. Tomorrow night, another wonderful show. The show, of course, tonight was produced by my lovely, talented, and may I say it, long-suffering wife Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. The chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network is John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams and the archives of all the programs on the Horn, as well as the podcasting and the archives of several other fine liberal programs, including that of our good friend Mike Malloy, coming up in a matter of minutes on Air America. Ben has a fundraiser going on. Help Ben bring the fundraiser to an end, please, if you can. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. Our good buddy Gene, the news ninja, maintains the news alert function of the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com website. All the programs on the Horn